You and I have both become big Susie Madrak fans over at Crooks and
Liars. Oh, yeah. She's great.
Well, she's got a post up there today. It's from 9 o'clock this morning. Obama says we should take our time on health care. Al Franken rips White House for lack of leadership. And Susie writes, oh, no, he didn't. What happened to every day we delay, Americans are dying? What the hell is wrong with Obama? Why does he always choose accommodation over moral action? And his lack of leadership is getting downright scary. Congress is fumbling through a game of charades, trying to figure out the clues, while it becomes increasingly clear there's no game plan. And then she quotes an article in two paragraphs as follows. President Barack Obama says, quote, we should take our time, unquote, getting to a final health care bill. He said Thursday he wants to go through the legislation in detail with Republicans. I don't know how she could have bolded any bolder with Republicans. He wants to go through the legislation in detail with Republicans to examine their ideas and Democratic ideas to see whether there are better ways to improve the nation's health care system than have already been proposed. Now, we both know, and I think there is reason to agree with Senator Franken, that there has been something less than stunning leadership on the health care issue. With that in mind, it's kind of hard to see how he can be any more accommodating, and yet at the same time, these groups that you assert, and I hope you are correct, are hopelessly marginalizing themselves, are still calling it Obamacare. It's being called Obamacare on the floor of the Senate. It is being called Obamacare on the floor of the House. 34 state legislatures have legislation pending that would try to forestall what they are calling a government takeover of health care.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'm not saying I want anybody to be violent, but I want, but I do want this administration, and to be honest, and I don't think there's a lot of room for disagreement on this, I don't think there's anybody out there who will assert that Barack Obama has a fully functioning understanding of the Southern mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the crowd that drives around to this day with tags on their front bumpers of the old Confederate soldier that says, forget hell. Okay?
Heritage, not hate.
There you go. There's one of them. And the fact of the matter is, like I mentioned last night and a few other times, back in the 1830s in South Carolina got civil when they were when Mr. Andrew Jackson stood up and showed them the rope that he intended to hang all the secessionists with.
It was a good moment, wasn't it?
And they stayed civil until somebody tried to dialogue with them. And then, do you understand? Do you see? I mean, I'm not trying to be disagreeable. I'm not trying to just say, no, Matt, you're wrong.
No. I don't take it that way, Bob. This is a conversation. This is a conversation. And, you know, if we clash our swords, our rhetorical swords a little bit, those sparks coming off the swords, that's truth. That's the light of truth right there. That's the way I look at it.
Oh, you're good.
I try. Listen, Bob, before I answer you, I just want to tell you something. I've had an idea. I don't know if this would fly. This is just an idea that occurred to me years ago. Would be to take the Confederate flag and make it black and white and gray color. Just take the color out of it. And on the bumper sticker, just say, if it's history, take the color out.
Ooh, because everything back then was in black and white.
That's right. We know that's true. There was no color because we have pictures.
Yeah, Matthew Brady shot him.
I tell you what, I went to a Matthew Brady exhibition one time. That's some pretty extraordinary photography.
Oh, it's, yes.
Blown up to wall size.
Yeah.
All right, well, first of all,
I drove by the exit to Antietam Battlefield, and it was like feeling the pull of a magnet and trying
to... Oh, I'll tell you what.
I drove by exits to Gettysburg and Antietam.
Ugh. and you just keep wanting to pull over.
And and all of Interstate 81 goes right down the right down the Shenandoah Valley, and you can pull off anywhere and see where Thomas J. Jackson got all psychotic and kicked a bunch of Yankee ass.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I've actually stood on the little hillock where my ancestor, General Thomas, rallied the troops at Chickamauga. And, you know, Shiloh, of course, has both been there.
Yeah.
I used to love stopping at Civil War battlefields as a kid. But my dad has a collection of pictures. Every single one we stopped at, I would make him take a picture of me with my face, like, stuck in the cannon barrel. Anyway.
I'd love to see that collection, Matt. Well, just one last thing, and this comes in from David in Tennessee. The groups that Matt feels are marginalizing themselves are doing that with us, too. Us, and sadly not the balance of the nation. They've marginalized themselves with us. They haven't marginalized themselves with America as a whole. You know, not their base, and just enough so-called undecideds to swing an election. And as such, says David, we're in a boatload of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So,
all right.
You know, food for thought.
Here's the first thing I'm going to say. You're talking about this movement and how it tends to be more successful because the locality issue, you know, all politics is local. I have two words for you. Parker Griffith.
Sure.
Okay?
And that's why I said that Shelby's doing part of what he's doing, because he's been left having to do it by the utter ignoramus ineptitude of Parker Griffith.
All right. Now, first of all, see, there you go. You refer to that, and you're absolutely right. I think that's what Shelby's doing. But consider this. All day today, the press has begun to examine Mr. Shelby's association with lobbyists, with contractors, and so forth. All of this is coming out of the woodwork now. It's all coming out of the shadows. And at the same time, it really looks bad. The optics are awful for the Republican Party. It actually seems sort of selfish. So here's what's going to happen. You break that hold. What happens? He loses. And what do? You don't give him the money for the tankers. You don't give him the money for the FBI center. He loses. Every time he loses, he becomes less and less of a factor. Second, you were talking about taking time. And I just want to make something clear, Bob. What would happen? What would the mainstream media, the so-called liberal media, what would they say if Barack Obama said, we must rush to do this immediately? They would bring on some guys who would just play it right into the whole theme of, you know, they're just doing this in the dead of night, shutting it down our throat.
What's the hurry?
Right, exactly. What's the hurry? So, number one, it's a talking point. It says, I'm not rushing. Let's take our time. Also, what I want you to consider is what happened in the last couple of weeks. You know, we had the State of the Union, and then we had Rahm Emanuel the next day saying, no, we're going to move forward on health care. And then the next day, he gets quoted in the New York Times saying, well, first what we're going to do is we're going to do deficit reduction, jobs, and financial reform. And people are like, oh, whoa, wait a minute. And you got Ezra Klein over there saying, oh, no. This is bad because you've got these big bills and it's going to take forever to get these passed. And if you put health care reform at the end of that, you know, it's going to take months. Well, guess what? While he's saying that in the very same New York Times article, you've got just two paragraphs later, the Senate had a vote on whether to go to PAYGO rule. Republicans voted no. They lost. And guess what? Deficit reduction. Check. Jobs bill. Instead of one omnibus jobs bill, or instead of one omnibus stimulus bill, There's a different tactic going on this time. This spring, they have been dividing these bills up. The only omnibus bill that's left is health care. You had Barack Obama today talking about splitting the cap-and-trade legislation. Because one small bill, one small issue, is easier to resolve in a vote than an omnibus bill. Because with an omnibus bill, you've got all the hands involved. So that's part of it. When he says taking time, it's a talking point. When Rahm Emanuel says we're doing financial reform first, he doesn't mean we're going to spend the next 6 months arguing about the financial reform bill. The financial reform bill. No, we're going to do financial reform. And what's happening is, remind you, reconciliation is a messy process. You have to follow procedures. It takes time. So here's what's happening. It's Act 4. What do you do in Act 4? You take the audience favorite off of center stage and give them a costume change in the wings, and then you have the other dancers come out in the center of the stage and occupy the audience's attention while that's going on.
Well, you know what? There may be more to be said for your position than mine, Matt. I offer you something from Bob Seska's awesome blog.
Oh, I love Bob. Go ahead.
He quotes a news story that says the following: Senate Republicans don't have much of an appetite to give President Barack Obama their version of question and answer time. Not after seeing how Obama handled House Republicans last week.
We're always happy to hear from the president, but I don't really feel any compelling need to do it on camera, Texas Senator John Cornyn, the Republicans' chief campaign strategist, told Politico. The White House has suggested it would like Obama to address the Senate GOP conference with TV cameras present.
Obama administration officials are eager for voters to see Obama operate in a format he relishes, and handle his former Senate colleagues the same way he did last week with House Republicans at their annual retreat. Asked about the White House invitation to Senate Republicans, Cornyn added,
"For what purpose? Was it for photo op or is it serious? President can invite Mitch McConnell, John Boehner, or anybody he wants for a serious talk about issues."
It's amazing how they're ducking the fight, isn't it?
That's delightful. That says it's working.
It is working.
I desperately want to be wrong.
I'll give you five reasons real quick why I don't think the Tea Party movement is going to work. One, because of all the infighting between the Tea Party organizations themselves. Two, because organizing is going to be more difficult than they think. Three, because you always have the tension of the GOP wanting to absorb it. Meanwhile, teabaggers as a group, when they're surveyed, don't have a very high opinion of the Republican Party.
Well, that's true, and let me add one more, if I may, with an obvious reference to The Godfather. You've got a whole bunch of people in there whose primary and motivating purpose is to wet their beak.
That's right.
Witness the $89.99 teabag medallion necklace.
Well, look, Bob, the very first teabagging websites that went up after Rick Santelli's rant last February 17th, the very first Tea Party websites that went up were selling Ayn Rand swag.
Oi.
Yeah. You had objectivists trying to make a buck from the very beginning of this thing. The Tea Party movement is and always was
a hustle
enterprise.
It's a hustle.
Always a hustle.
And in fact, there's enough heat being generated about it now that one teabagger by the name of Eric Odom, who calls himself a Republican strategist, is saying that more importantly, we as free market activists should applaud their work in writing these books. And we should reward them with our pocketbooks, not balk at them for doing so. Pay up,
Mr.
chumps!
Hey, Mr. Odom should know. He was one of the original Tea Party activists.
Yes.
One of the original electronic activists. Some of those websites with the swag on them were his.
Yeah, right. Don't dry up my gravy train.
It's there like you Eric go. Erickson, when Eric Erickson said, you know, something smells scammy about this Tea Party convention, I was like, yeah, you should talk.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, what is that website?
Yeah, because they don't like the fact that this is, I guess, some sort of Johnny Teabag Lately. Some guy named Judson something or another in Nashville, who's a multi-million-dollar air lawyer, who has set up this scam there. That's what puts pissing in people's Wheaties, is wrong people getting the money.
That's right. That's right. Now,
and that their illegal immigrant hotel worker won't bring the flag in. See how they hate America?
I want to tell you my strategy for tomorrow, by the way, Bob.
Yes?
I'm going up to Nashville.
Are you going?
I'm going. Let me tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to aim.
You are so not going to get credentialed.
I don't care. I don't even want to get inside. Because I
You want the loonies on the outside, don't you?
I figured it out. I have a plan. But do you remember in the Sarah Palin video that I shot before, Sarah Palooza?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember how the space that was filled up by Mike Huckabee's bus on Sunday was filled with Fox News vehicles the next day?
Yep.
Every Fox News affiliate from 250 miles around had every single vehicle they owned there. That's the kind of visuals I'm going to be catching tomorrow.
Oh, that'll be sweet. And let us know the link the minute you have them. It'll go up on the website.
Oh, I've got the I just went and got the equipment today. As soon as I get back to the house, the video will be uploaded, and hopefully Sunday by the afternoon, I'll have something.
And by the way, you are being advised by David in Tennessee he's a Nashvillian.
Uh-huh.
David says, tell Matt to be careful around those people. They are not in a good mood these days.
You know what? Land of the free, home of the brave. And now I've already been through more fire than most of those two badgers could ever imagine.
But they are a mean bunch. As Mike Malloy is wont to say, Matt, watch your back. Got a roll, got a whole bunch stacked up behind you, but good talking to you, Matt. Have a wonderful weekend.
Bye, man. All right. Have a good night.
Later. Bye now. That, of course, Matt Osborne from Osborne, Inc., OSBORNEINK.com. It's a daily read. It is simply a daily read. Let's keep it moving. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Preston.
Well, hey, Preston. How are you?
Doing all right. Doing all right. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. It's been a very good, very interesting week.
Yeah, I've caught parts of it here and there, and it has been that for sure. I was kind of surfing Amazon today, and I noticed Jeff Bigger's newer book.
Yes, Reckoning at Eagle Creek. I am told that it is something.
Yeah, I was reading some of the reviews of it, and a lot of people are saying that for sure. So I'd like to check that out. You know, I'd also like to see, more progressive books be made available on audio. There's the Kindle option now for a lot of books, but fewer of the progressive books are on audio, like a CD, than, you know, Glenn Beck's latest whatever, psychotic rampaging. Tom Hartman, I love his stuff, but I don't know, sometimes I have more time to listen than I do to read books.
Well, sure, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of truckers, utilize books on CD, so the right wing's able to kind of have an avenue to that audience.
You know, it's one of those little secret moments of Bob's ego in hiding, Preston. I've always wanted to be in on the production of an audiobook.
You'd be great at that, actually. An audiobook that I'm listening to right now that has an excellent reader, a performer, really, because he'll do different voices for different characters of a real book. It was John Perkins' book, The Secret History of the American Empire.
Oh, wow.
One he wrote after, the big mega seller, Confessions of an Economic Hitman. the people that, you know, watch your back for. But, you know, he had to think long and hard about whether or not he wanted to write that book, and he had a lot of people pressuring him from inside, you know, that world.
Yet not to.
That's right. And finally it got to a point where his daughter insisted that he do it because, you know, she sees the, you know, the greater risks in the future for future generations and also just the current suffering, the unacceptable suffering that's being caused by these forces around the world, you know, Guatemala and Chile and East Timor and, you know, and once we get over that kind of separation and see that we're all related, you know, we have to speak on their behalf, do what we can. So he did it, and it was really amazing that that book became a bestseller, was on the bestseller list for weeks and weeks and weeks. And through that attention, he got a lot of support and a lot of solidarity and was emboldened to continue with his work. You know, he works a lot now with indigenous people in solidarity with them.
Well, you know, Preston, with you mentioning that, I'm reminded of a story that I've got in the stacks that somehow begs to at least be mentioned in passing somewhere along the way this evening, and you've opened that door, if you don't mind.
Sure.
A story out of The Guardian from yesterday. We lost something in the world recently, and it may not seem like much, but every time we lose something like this, we can only guess at what we've lost. At the age of 84 years old, the last speaker of a language called Bo has died. Her name was Boa Sir, and she was a great Andamanese language. It's a series of languages thought to date back to pre-Neolithic human settlement of Southeast Asia, 65,000 years in the making, and it's gone. It's gone.
You know, I saw something about that on Common Dreams, their website.
That exactly.
Do you happen to remember where? What part of the world she was in?
Yeah. Well, the Andaman Islands are in the Bay of Bengal. And at, you know, in current circumstances, Preston, they're governed by India. But here's the, you know, here's the catch. According to the report I'm looking at, the indigenous population has steadily collapsed since the island chain was colonized by the British in 1858. And when they did that, they used it primarily for purposes of a penal colony. Okay.
Yeah.
And the tribes fought back fiercely in hopes of preserving themselves, but eventually they managed to build trunk roads into the islands, and that was the end of it. There's an NGO by the name of Survival International, and they estimate that the number of great Andamanese peoples have declined in the past 150 years from about 5,000 to 52. And this is the pull quote from Stephen Corey of Survival International. He says, the great Andamanese were first massacred, then all but wiped out by paternalistic policies, which left them ravaged by epidemics of disease and robbed of their land and independence. With the death of Boa Sur and the extinction of the Bo language, a unique part of human society is now just a memory. Boa's loss is a bleak reminder that we must not allow this to happen to other tribes of the Andaman Islands. And I agree with him, and I would say it extends far beyond the Andaman Islands. And this kind of dovetails with, I was watching a NOVA program the other night, Secrets of Machu Picchu or something like that. And of course, I always sit in just slack-jawed, rapt attention at these things because I love them so.
Me too.
But there was scant brief mention made in that documentary. They said the Inca peoples had no form of writing, but they had these strings with knots on them by which they kept accountings. And they sort of slid past some fairly recent speculative research, of which I'm aware, that suggests that actually those quipu knots were not simply accounting devices. that they were literally, and it's not at all surprising when you consider the context of that culture, they were literally a tactile, textile form of writing.
Interesting, yeah.
But we can never know it. We can never know what it was. And if it was writing, it is coding on a level that would baffle some of the highest and brightest computer programmers out there.
Yeah, like the weaving of Guatemalan clothing, the Mayan Indians' clothing, and
right.
other indigenous textiles.
And just as the British came into the Andaman Islands, and for their own purposes, rather carelessly eliminated the Wogs, you know how it is. By the same token, the Spanish arrived in the Inca Empire, and one of the first things they did once they had achieved their conquest is they went about and they gathered every quipu that they could find and threw them in a mound and burned them all because they were quite sure that they were demon-possessed. The things we lose, Preston, the things we lose by virtue of our obsession with, there's a dollar to be made in that.
Yeah, for sure. Oftentimes these people are harmed by, what's called the free market system, but it's so often they're having markets imposed on them. Like, water attempts to make water a commodity that you pay for,
and of course here in the Appalachians we are, or what I've come to refer to as Appalachistan, we're smack dab in the middle of that issue.
Okay.
The most well-watered area on the between the Great Northwest and here, the most well-watered spots on the North American continent, and we're actively polluting every last drop we can lay hands on.
Yep. And, if you can create scarcity, then I guess you can boost the selling price of your product. And if, privatize what's still drinkable and make it scarce. Yeah, it's kind of what they're doing with, like, fish. There were fish in the wild, and people could get a free lunch. But, their guiding motto, no free lunch. So you kind of poison the fish in the streams and the lakes, and then you pull them all out of the ocean, and then you create new fish, frankenfish, in some pool that you own.
Well,
have a patent on.
Again, it always amazes me the things that you touch on, Preston, because here in West Virginia, one of those economic development plans that we have, we have people selling, raising and then selling for public consumption, Arctic char in tanks down in abandoned coal mines. Tell me that's going to be good.
On Common Dreams also, I think yesterday or the day before, they had a story on how shrimp were being farmed. These were in India, and they're being shipped. The so efficient free market has to ship the shrimp, 2,000 miles away. And these things are just swimming in the most toxic stew you can imagine. Because again, natural, highly functional, efficient, beautiful, healthy ecosystems are destroyed. And then they concoct these other systems, utilizing all kinds of the chemicals and pesticides and antibiotics and probably growth hormones. Just a mess. And then they got washed the stuff in like some other toxic bath. Then they ship it over here. And, of course, the industry's been fighting against any sort of regulation or labeling. But, again, there's that movement going on. A lot more food consciousness in this country, for sure. Again, the things we lose so that other people can make a buck, so that McDonald's can manipulate us and our children into eating their stuff, and losing important food traditions and, healthier food traditions, local food traditions, stuff like that. So, anyway, you watch any episodes of Zimmern or Berdane lately?
I only got to catch a little bit of the last episode of Tony Bourdain. But it's a new season, so every Monday is something new, and hopefully I'll just catch it by accident somewhere along the way. I'm trying to think of where he was this week.
Well, Bourdain was in Prague.
Yes, he was. Because he went to eat a really good bowl of North Vietnamese pho.
Okay.
Because there's a big North Vietnamese immigrant population that came there, you know, during the Cold War.
Great. So, you know, that's always good to hear, too, how, you know, there's a multiculturalism going on in respect of other cultures through various migrations and stuff. You know, it's interesting at that Teabagger rally convention they had, I think, yesterday, Tom Tancredo got up there, spoke to the audience, and talked about the terrible cult of multiculturalism.
Yes, that was part of the same Jeremiad in which he screamed that only that because we don't have literacy tests at the polls is why how we wound up with a devoted socialist ideologue in the White House.
You know, and there's that kind of pro-literacy prejudice. I mean, we were speaking earlier about other modes of communication, you know, the oral tradition, you know, hieroglyphics, music, poetry, you know, codes of all sorts and weavings are in art, are in beating or whatever. So, you know, if you can't read, you know, you're necessarily inferior, according to Tancredo, and you know, it can be obviously it's useful to read. I'm pro reading, but if you're not, and if you just concentrate on oral traditions or whatever,
right? And the other side of that coin was I feel kind of geeky just talking about the television I watched, but every now you know there is good TV out there if you just dare look for it.
Yeah.
That Frontline episode that I caught that I referenced last night called Digital Nation. In which they talked about sort of where we've been and where we're going. And when people complained about the changes taking place in our comprehension levels, and they really had spooky examples of it, as a result of internet saturation, there was some anthro-sociological fellow there who also had a vested monetary interest in the internet, who said, well, yeah, but you know what? We lost a lot when we learned to write, too. He said, you know, the people who, people in pre-literate Greece memorized thousands and thousands and thousands of lines of Homer. And there's nobody out there who could do that now.
Yeah.
But we learned to write, and we've still got it. And I was thinking, well, buddy, we may still have it, but you don't get it.
I noticed HBO, speaking of different ways of communicating and perceiving things, HBO tomorrow is going to show up a movie. It's kind of, it's not quite a documentary, but it's based on a real person named Temple Grandin. And she has Asperger's syndrome. It's kind of like autism, I guess, but.
Yeah, it's in the past it was also diagnosed, and a horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner could correct me, but I think I'm right. It was also diagnosed as high-functioning autism.
Okay. And, you know, however it, you know, was problematic for her in her life, she went on to kind of transform the meat processing industry in some ways, just to decrease the suffering of the animals as they're going into these, you know, into the slaughterhouse and stuff. And she could set up these systems that would calm them down and there'd be less, you know, hysterical cows falling over and, you know, breaking legs and stuff like that. She's been interviewed by Terry Gross a couple of times on her condition and just how she perceives things, and she can kind of understand things from, like, she's got a Title I book, The Cow's Eye Point of View or something like that, or Through the Cow's Eye, but she said the marketing people didn't like that title, so... They changed it.
No, the American Beef Council will protest.
they called it Thinking in Shapes instead or something like that. So anyway, very interesting person. And she actually teaches at my alma mater, Colorado State University. So something to watch out for.
Oh, go Rams!
Yeah, and speaking of the meat industry and stuff that they're hysterical about right now, did you notice that Michael Pollan was interviewed by Oprah Winfrey?
No, I didn't. What? That's huge.
It was huge. She did a whole program on, just food, a lot of food issues and vegetarian issues. And, you know, she had a big run-in with the meat industry a few years ago when she interviewed a former rancher who had become a vegetarian, and he spoke out against how cows are being raised, you know, full of antibiotics and all that stuff. And then at one point Oprah Winfrey said, oh my gosh, I'm never going to eat another hamburger. And like the commodity.
That's when they sued her.
Yes. And they knew they weren't going to win, but it was one of those lawsuits that would just take up a ton of her time and a ton of her money. And it kind of chilled, you know, I think it chilled a lot of discussion. A lot of people are like, whoa, like what they're kind of messing with Oprah. Anyway, so that was like 6 years ago at least. And now she came back to this whole program on not eating meat. Alicia Silverstone, I think is her name, an actress.
Yes. Yeah, from Clueless.
Yeah. She has a recent book on a lot of food issues and options, alternative, you know, eating styles. And then Michael Pollan comes out, and they get into lots of different issues that we've spoken about. And also they talk about that movie called Food, Inc., Food Incorporated.
Yes.
And it instantly went to number one on Amazon among DVDs, and it was so good to see, because some of this stuff has just been laying out in the margins. You know, it's getting through, you know, the art film or the independent film circuits. You know, some university classes are showing it, and that's all wonderful. But now it came out to the mainstream in a big way, and I was just delighted. And yeah, I'm not sure how the meat industry is going to respond, you know, because when people do connect, when they network, they, like Howard Zinn said, a force that no government can.
And once again, it's there's also that false dynamic at work, Preston, whereby we say the meat industry, but what I think you and I are talking about are the CAFOs.
Yeah, exactly.
And we're not talking about some guy who's out there. Grass feeding his herd, and the breakdown comes in the fact that that in order to survive now, because the market is no longer free, because the market is dictated that all beef must pass through a CAFO before it becomes your armored chili, that would be the downer cows, or you know something you can throw on the grill, that would be the ones that go in standing. Because the market has been hindered and hobbled, so to speak, by the necessity of going through those CAFOs, your typical classic beef farmer can't make the living that he made in years past simply by raising cattle realistically. You know, the reason that Kobe beef is so much vastly more expensive once you factor out the trip from Japan is the fact that they don't hustle the beef through the maturity process. For all intents and purposes, a key part of CAFO beef is the fact that they are hustled through a what in human populations is referred to as a precocious puberty. And they are made to put on weight faster than cattle are supposed to put on weight, so that Kobe beef in the pen in Japan is sitting there contentedly munching rice and drinking sake, no kidding, and getting daily massages from the Japanese cowhands. By the time it turns into steak, that steak is beautiful. It is just majestically marbled, and has a flavor beyond anything that you can get.
So, did you say the cows drink sake?
Yes.
Okay, that's cool.
They go to the slaughterhouse hiccuping.
Right, that's nice.
They're internally tenderized.
You know, animals are like,
and they're so obsessively cleanly handled. You know, they're not standing up to their kneecaps or whatever cattle have in their own excrement. They're extremely well handled so that they can go to exquisite Japanese restaurants, you know, just sort of shown to the teppanyaki grill on each side and then sliced razor thin and served over ponzu sauce with this insane daikon radish garnish that drives me wild every time I'm in D.C.
Great.
And, you know, nobody ever gets sick. And it's delicious.
Uh-huh.
But you can't do that with KFO beef.
Right. And for your audience who might not know that acronym, it means something like a concentrated animal farming operation or something like
yes,
that.
Yes, right. I just the shorthand I use for it is Cowschwitz.
Yeah. right. Yeah, and these markets, they got, factory-tized or industrialized in a way that it destroys the family or the community system.
Right, and it has down-the-line effects, and it has artisanal effects, if you will, Preston, because once everything is coming out of a CAFO, then consider how Walmart handles beef. You can't go and press the little buzzer at the meat counter and say, could you cut me a ribeye 2 inches thick? I'm celebrating. And I'm really pissing off all the vegetarians out there right now, and I'm sorry. You can't do that at Walmart because everything comes pre-portioned and pre-packaged. You can't get a pound and a half of ground beef. You either get a pound or you get 2 pounds.
That's right.
You can't talk to a butcher, and it's like at Christmas when we do our standing rib of beef for our annual Christmas feast. I have to turn the world upside down trying to find a standing rib that still has the bone in it, because it's all been deboned and vacuum sealed somewhere in Kansas or Nebraska or God knows where, and sent points east. So look what you've done. You've taken at one fell swoop you've cost cut by abusing the cattle on the production end, on the feeder end, the slaughter end, and you've also taken one of the most beloved people in any enlightened culture, be it England or France or Germany or Italy, Japan, you've taken away the neighborhood butcher.
That's right, and oftentimes the workers in the system now are getting so abused. I mean, the rate at which people in slaughterhouses are losing fingers and, you know, hurting their wrists and all that. I mean, it's really a shame. And also, they're undercutting unions. There have been unions among these
exactly
for a while.
You know, look at the long and ugly and hateful and bloody fight in Tar Heel, North Carolina, for recognition for the people who work on a slaughter line that kills 32,000 hogs a day.
It was Smithfield, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And we had that program one night, where it turns out we found out everything that all the things that are Smithfield that you think aren't. You know, wow, I just won't buy Smithfield. You can't, because Smithfield is Eckrich. Smithfield is Hillshire Farms. Smithfield is Cumberland Gap. Smithfield is, you know, Applewood smoked ham. Smithfield is bacon. Smithfield is everything.
Yeah,
it's so, because
the options can be hard to find, but thankfully there is kind of an authentic free market. You know, where, you know, some people are getting into naturally raised beef and free-range chickens and pesticides
and
vegetables.
My frustration with that, Preston, is the fact that it is made artificially difficult to bring that back.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
There's nowhere around here that I can sign up for a subscription farm. There's nowhere around that I would, well, I probably could, but I can't afford it, go and buy a half of, I have to buy a freezer first. But go and buy a beef or a half a beef that's been lovingly grass-fed. You remember Nanette from the chat room? She brought me a few packages of fresh beef that was grass-raised, no hormones, no antibiotics. They knew the guy who raised the beef. They knew the beef.
Great.
And it was, oh, Preston, it was candy.
I bet.
And it was so far removed. The hamburger, you would have to put a little bit of oil in the skillet because there wasn't so much fat in the hamburger, and the hamburger stayed the same size when you put it in the skillet and as when you took it out. You know,
this is
all possible. You know, I drive down, you see what you do to me.
You know, bringing back the buffalo is possible. You know,
yeah.
Buffalo meat is pretty good and nutritious.
Oh, it's magnificent. You really have to know how to cook it, because the difference between delicious buffalo and shoe leather is a matter of seconds.
Okay. And, you know, I haven't been able to sign up to a community-supported agriculture project either. I know there are a few around. There are a handful in Denver. There are several in Boulder and also Longmont. I've enjoyed just finding out about them and kind of advocating for them. I haven't signed up to one because it would entail I'd have to drive somewhere to pick it up. And right now I'm kind of living where I don't really need to drive at all and kind of enjoying that. And also, if it, you know, since I don't have a family, it would probably be more than I need, although it would be fun just to give it away. But I do go to farmers markets a lot, and, you know, I may yet sign up for one of those, but, you know, farmers markets are popping up a lot. I would imagine you do have a farmers market, at least, in your area.
We do. We do over across the river in Fayetteville, and at the right time of year, there is some magnificent stuff to be had.
Okay.
Just delightful. Hey, Preston, I'm going to try to get two more calls in, but it's always such a joy to hear from you.
Likewise. And one quick resource for
sure.
People might be curious. Localharvest.org has a list of the hundreds and hundreds of alternative, progressive agriculture efforts all over the country. It's really fun to read about. Anyway, yeah,
Localharvest.org?
Localharvest.org, yes.
Okay, cool. Well, Preston, have a wonderful weekend, and I hope we'll be talking soon.
You bet.
All right, bye now. That's our buddy Preston calling from the Denver area. We'll try to get a couple more calls in. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, this is Haven giving you a call back.
Well, hey, Haven, how are you?
I'm doing all right.
Thanks for being patient and waiting.
Oh, that's cool. That's fine. It's been an interesting week. Started off the week going to see James Hansen at UNC.
Oh, that must have been excellent.
Yeah, that was awesome. That was awesome. He was incredibly interesting, and he had facts on top of facts on top of facts, which means that we're in a lot of trouble because I think that last time I talked to you, I said the problem with facts is that people just can't absorb them, and they, you know, facts just bounce off people. And he had facts for days.
Yeah, well, you remember a couple of weeks back, Don Blankenship, so-called debated Robert F. Kennedy Jr., right?
Yeah.
Well, eight months or so ago, Don Blankenship called out James Hansen for a debate.
Oh, yeah?
And Dr. Hansen said, sure, name the place, name the time, name the date. I am there. And Don Don Blankenship said, really? I hear my mother calling. And ran away.
Yeah, I'd never seen Hansen before. And when he walked out onto the stage, I said, wow, this guy is, I mean, his head is huge. And I just think, well, he probably is the smartest person in the room. There were probably about 300 people there. Maybe 400. I didn't expect there to be even 100 people. But it was a packed house there. It was a packed house, and he took a lot of questions. One thing that was interesting was he is against
cap and trade,
yeah. Yeah. And he talked to John Kerry. He mentioned that he talked to John Kerry about it. And he was really disappointed. You got a real sense that he was really disappointed in John Kerry because he gets the idea that Kerry knows what the right thing to do is, and he is so beat down, you know, so uninspired. And he is just like, this is the best we can do for right now. And
and doesn't that just make you crazy, Haven?
It really does. It does.
It does. Because that's the same misgivings that I have about cap and trade. There's actually something out there. There's another concept out there that's actually called cap and tax.
I think he referred to it as cap and dividend is what he.
Right.
Or thinks that's what, yeah.
But
yeah,
there's,
yeah, yeah.
There's, and it's too much to try to go into in such a short period of time. But you cap carbon dioxide emissions, and then you tax them, and you don't create this phony baloney bubble market for it. But instead, what you do is you take those tax dollars and you turn those tax dollars around into active promotion of clean green energy research, and you thereby expand the green energy base at a rate that is exponentially faster than anything that might be hoped to happen arising out of cap and trade.
Well, it seemed like I've kind of looked into cap and trade before I went there and read up on it before I went to the presentation that he did. And it just seems to me like the problem with it is two things. If there is no incentive to change to so-called cleaner forms of energy, and if cap and trade is, you have to make people not do business as usual. And you can kind of have your cake and eat it too with that. And any plan that does that can be anything but a failure, as far as I can tell.
Right. Right. And, I mean, it's like the fairy tale of clean coal. But even Barack Obama says, well, we must investigate and develop clean coal technology. Well, okay, fine. Then while we're at it, let's investigate and develop, unicorn-driven steam turbines as another energy source. Because right. they are equally as likely to come to fruition.
Right. I'm gonna go ahead and get off. But
yeah,
do you know who Gil Scott-Heron is?
Oh yes.
Well, he is in Durham tonight, and he put on a really interesting talk. And one little trivia point: one of his backup singers from back in the day turns out was Maxine Waters.
No kidding.
Yeah, that was pretty interesting.
That's amazing. I had no idea.
Yeah.
Well, Haven, you have yourself a great weekend, and I hope we will talk again soon, and take care.
Yep.
All right. Bye now. And thus it is that the show comes to its end with a whole bunch more blinking lights, and I apologize for those of you I did not get to. We can start all over again on Monday. If you'll be here, I'll be here too, and we will have a fine old time. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. You, first of all, who financially support and contribute to keep this effort underway. We struggle all along the way. It would certainly be nice to not sweat a month, but you know what? As long as we can, we'll be here. Thanks also, of course, always to Lottie, to ELO, Sue, to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to John Fox, Peter Godbold, and Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Not a word of this happens without the incredibly hard work of Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Another big reason this is still on the air has to do with the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColRiverWind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy!
That I can't carry a tune in a bucket, I'd be singing something like, and ain't it good to be back home again, because it is good to be back here in the home studios of the Horn. It was a magnificent trip to D.C., and after that, it just got plain weird. But I am so glad to be home. Made it safely at that. There were a lot of folks who did not make it safely home, just by way... We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it. Of course, it is Moran Monday on the Horn. Line up your nominations for your favorite right-wing Morans and get ready to defend your choices, I suppose. I have a lot of nominees myself. Why does my microphone sound funny in my ears? Is it because of how my microphone sounded in my ears while I was... Does this sound okay to you guys? Because it sounds a little weird to me. Oh, that's why. Oh, Ferg, quit fooling with the EQ. Horn intern junior grade Ferg had my high-end EQ cranked way the heck up. Not a good thing. But anyway, okay, so that's fixed. Gee, I wonder what else he monkeyed with. We're going to have a little conversation with Horn intern junior grade Ferg. Missed him terribly. Missed them all terribly. Missed the whole family terribly. And, you know, it was the end of January. It was the 30th of January. And as I told you, I was going from the Health Action 2010 conference. I was going to go on up to the Progress Pennsylvania, Progress PA conference up in Harrisburg at the invitation of my good friend and colleague on the Horn, Rick Smith. And so I said, so, okay, yeah, I'm going to do that. How long is it going to take me to get? Isn't that 2.5-3 hours tops? It's easy. You know, you'll go out of D.C., go toward Baltimore, head up around 295 to 195 to 695, and then you'll take your I-83 up. And I did all that. But I did it in blinding snow. And it is a truism that if you're below the Mason-Dixon line, odds are you can't get around very well in snow unless you come from somewhere mountainous like I do. But there I was, toddling along, you know, doing every bit of 25, 30 miles an hour over roads in which you could not see the lanes, nor the lane markers, nor the ends of the lanes and what became snowbanks. Yeah. Took a long time. And it took even longer. And after a while, you remember that scene from Groundhog Day? Where they're in the blizzard and they have to turn around and go back to Punxsutawney? I was just afraid that I was going to wind up waking up on Sunday morning or something and having the clock radio go over to 6 a.m. and hearing, rise and shine, campers, it's cold out there, and hearing Sonny and Cher and realizing that I was, in fact, trapped in my own Groundhog Day hell. But Groundhog Day isn't here yet. Groundhog Day will be here tomorrow. We traditionally eat several groundhogs on Groundhog. No, I'm kidding. They're a little too greasy for my taste. I've had it, but it ain't real good. So I got just barely across the Maryland line on I-83 heading up into Pennsylvania, along about a place called Hopewell Township, which is maybe about 12, 13 miles south of York, PA, when all the traffic moving ever so slowly on that road came to a halt and stayed halted for the next couple of hours, at which point the Groundhog Day analogy began to look more and more apt. Well, it turns out, because everything that stopped traffic in my northbound lane actually happened in the southbound lane, there was a 20-plus car pileup of people who stopped and couldn't stop and slid into the rear end of somebody, and the people behind them tried to stop and couldn't stop and slid into their rear end, who slid into their rear end, who slid into the rear. I saw all kinds of hoods at 45 degrees and mashed in rear ends, and I saw people doing full 360s in the middle of. Oh, it was real exciting. But I got to sit there for 2 hours. And in the course of sitting there for 2 hours, after having just been at this magnificent conference full of people of goodwill, who are desirous of bringing meaningful change to the utterly screwed up way in which we do healthcare in this country, tons of goodwill, and met a lot of really, really decent, nice people, including and beyond. The folks that Guy James and I got to interview live on the air from Radio Row there at Health Action 2010. Just got to meet a lot of fine folks. And with all of that fresh in me, it was like having, I don't know, something really noxious thrown in your face. Rather than get too graphic, let's just say, it was like having vinegar thrown in your face to sit there for those 2 hours. And, you know, I got the radio. I don't have an iPod. I don't have any discs with me. I got a radio in the car. And you know me, I gravitate to the AM side, glutton for punishment that I am. So, well, first I ran across the FM side, and there was nothing interesting going on public radio. It was classical music by somebody who's dead. And moved around, moved on, and hey, it's America's Top Hits. It's all coming at you, brought to you by... click. So the FM dial was dead to me. And then I went to the AM dial. Hit the scan button. And there, it was Saturday. It was Saturday. You would think you would be free of the likes of that noxious right-wing drug-addled Dominican boy trip-taking gas bag flush flimball, but it wasn't. And it was a rerun of Flush from earlier in the week. Click. He was there again. The Groundhog Day thing was getting worse and worse. It wasn't Sonny and Cher I was getting Flush Flimball. Bill Murray was lucky with the Sonny and Cher bit. I Got You, Babe is a lot more tolerable than My Friends, He's Just Like Pol Pot. Click. And there he was again. Really, it was very, very Groundhog Day. And no Andy McDowell or anything. Not that Agnes would let me anywhere near anybody that looked like Andy McDowell. You get away from her. So there were three Flush Flim balls. Click. And there was then some woman with a voice made for print shrieking about the coming communist overthrow of America thanks to the. Click. And it was a Buy Gold Now ad. And click. And it was a bowling ball ad. Or a vacuum cleaner that picks up bowling balls ad. And click. Yeah, and finally I hit the Mexican station and I got a little salsa music or some such with some accordions in the background. I listened to that as long as I could. Click. And there he was again. There he was. Flush Flimball.
My friends, you must understand. You must understand, my friends, that they all do it the same way. In order to ram through dictatorial fascist communo plots, Hitler and Pol Pot and Stalin all did the same thing. They addressed health care, and they started killing off their elderly classes, because those were the people who knew the most, who were the most active, who were the best educated, and they killed them off. And my friends, that is what Barry Sotero is doing today. He's killing off our elderly class who remember how good it was to be an American with a conservative government in place under Ronald Reagan.
Groundhog Day.
And meanwhile, I'm sitting in traffic. I've seen five ambulances go by on the road. I've seen go and return and go and return flatbed tow trucks with them with two mashed cars on the flatbed and one being pulled behind it. And I'm sitting there thinking, you know, a real radio station in real small town America used to have what they called reporters. And these reporters would tell their communities this thing called news about what was happening in their community. Like if you happened to live in a community with I-83 going through it, and a 20-plus car pileup that had closed the southbound lane of I-83 because apparently people north of the Mason-Dixon line don't drive on that slop any better than people south of it do. But there was nothing there. The station that I was listening to out of York, Pennsylvania, a mere 12 miles away, was having a rerun beamed to it from their corporate home office in God knows where, God knows where. And so there was, for all I knew, and listen, I mean, I'm not trying to overinflate. For all I knew, there was a tractor trailer truck full of poisonous chemicals overturned up ahead, and people just dying like flies. Maybe the way the gas cloud was coming at me. I didn't know. And I didn't know because corporate America owns the damned airwaves in this country and considers it more important to rerun an old, insane in the first place, monologue by Flush Flimball comparing President Obama to Pol Pot, Hitler, and Stalin than it is to do public service and let people know what's going on in their own communities over the public airwaves. Was that just me, or is that incredibly frustrating? And beyond that, again, click, 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 click. Nothing but wing nuts. Nothing local, and nothing but wing nuts. Oh, I picked up a couple of college basketball games here and there. But again, nothing local. And I don't want to turn Moran Monday into one of those conversations, but the fact of the matter remains, we continue to get our asses whipped because we're barely in the game at all, if at all. We don't have any radio stations, the left, liberals, whatever. And we've got precious little programming. It was incredibly frustrating. And yet, trying to garner interest in the fact that we don't have anything approaching what we need in the way of information and messaging going back at the other side
is painfully uninteresting to most of the people who call themselves liberals in this country. I had a note from Reverbo earlier today directing me to a reprint of an article at Alternet by Danny Goldberg, who for a very short period of time ran Air America Radio. And the title of the article is Air America Radio RIP, It Didn't Have to Be This Way. And it's a good 3 pages long, so I'm not going to sit here and read it to you, but you can find it over at Alternet. I posted it on to my Facebook account earlier in the day with a request, one of those that I seldom do, that we get a whole bunch of people from the Horn audience to go and comment on that article at Alternet and let them know that we exist here. Because we've been at this more or less as long or longer than Air America was. In fact, I debuted my show in Beckley and on the Internet a couple of months before Air America went live. In fact, it will be 3 days from now, February the 4th, will be 6 years I've been at this, the Horn itself being almost 5 years old in its own right. So if you get a chance, again, Air America Radio, RIP, It Didn't Have to Be This Way, go and comment on the story at Alternet. And let folks know that the Horn is here. And, of course, there's the usual right-wingers out there. Air America died because people did not listen. If Air America had been entertaining, people would have listened. There was quite a bit of entertaining Air America programming, but it was damned hard to find, especially if you didn't have the internet. Bless their hearts. It looks like we do have a comment on the story. You know, folks, there's a home for liberal talk radio on the internet. It's podcast and streamed and archived. That place is called The Horn, the head-on radio network. It's in the hills and hollows of West Virginia, a real liberal front line, a place where workers' rights were died for, a place where our demand for cheap energy rips and destroys one of the oldest rainforests and headwaters for a third of the rivers in the United States in a feeding frenzy of mountaintop removal that The Horn makes it stand. The Horn's fighting for our future, and they do this by listener support and in conjunction with that and some partnerships with Ben Birch at the White Rose Society. They've gotten it done. Oh, wow, I'm going to blush. I know who this is. Tune into Bob Kincaid, and you will quickly see the intelligence, grit, heart, and heart tied together with logic and facts in this battle of ideas. Bob's a Rambo. Adrian! Oh, sorry, no, that's Rocky. Rambo didn't say much in the first Rambo movie, did he? Please learn from the mistakes of Air America. The money they blew in a week could let the Horn survive for 10 years. Thank you very kindly, and I know who you are who wrote that. Thank you. In regard to this saga in the snow of the past Saturday, Kate writes in and says, as an asphalt cowgirl, I'm hoping you had a water or a juice bottle to pee in. No, we just, you know, we tough guys. We just grit our teeth and wait till we get out of the snow. No, luckily I'd actually stopped, and this is the one good thing that happened out of this whole thing. I'd actually stopped at a little place called Fill Her Up. You see, it was worth remembering the name of. This will be, by the way, the food porn portion of the program. I'd stopped at a place called Fill Her Up on the Maryland-Pennsylvania line, and you know it's not all that far from the seashore. And I hadn't had any breakfast, and I'd been driving in that god-awful snow. And, you know, it's kind of a nerve-wracking experience, frankly. It's not any fun to be in, especially in light of the fact that when I got my rental vehicle, because I would never trust the rusty red truck in a trip like this, But when I got my rental vehicle, I called in a week before, and I said, okay, guys, I'm going to need something with all-wheel drive because I hear it may get nasty while I'm there, and I want to be sure about what I'm going to. Oh, absolutely, sir. Absolutely. No problem. No problem. We'll have it waiting for you. So I show up Wednesday to leave. And I say, I called in a week ago with a reservation for some sort of all-wheel drive vehicle. Clackety, 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 clackety on the keyboard. And you made a reservation, did you? Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure did. With us? Yeah, with you. Recall who you talked to? Uh-huh. Gave him the name. Huh. Huh. I hate it when you're expecting something and instead you get, huh. Well, we don't seem to have a reservation for you, sir. Don't you? That's okay. I'll take whatever all-wheel drive vehicle you got handy. Doesn't have to be anything fancy. We don't have any. Really? Well, what kind of cars do you have? We don't have any cars. Oddly enough, this would appear to be a car renting facility. As I realized the thing was quickly going to spiral downward into some sort of automotive version of Monty Python's cheese shop skit. Oh. So that was a 2-hour wait to get on the road for D.C. And by the time I left, I was leaving in a Chevy HHR, which is a sort of a PT Cruiser wannabe. That when you get in it, it's like sitting in a go-kart, and it drives like one, too. And it is most assuredly not all-wheel drive. I was really not happy about that. And even more so as I got on the road, and you know what? D.C. was it was weird. It was like some sort of nuclear holocaust movie, because I left the hotel in D.C. on Saturday morning, and it was... Well, you know how snow makes stuff quiet? D.C. was totally still. You could have heard individual brain cells in Republican skulls dying. It was so quiet. Well, if they had brain cells to begin with, but you know what I mean. And so I toddled on out of D.C. and onto the 3 and then the 195, Pennsylvania Avenue and the Baltimore, Washington Parkway, and so in accordance with what Kate wrote, yeah, I was pretty well busted by the time I got to the Maryland Pennsylvania line because I was convinced that someone had hidden Pennsylvania from me. And I found this little joint off the side of the road, down a slippery off ramp, and over and down to make a right and then make a right again, and you know, turn left at the house that's got the dead cow chained up in the front yard. You know how that goes. But I pulled over at this little unassuming place, nothing but a white painted block building, with a couple of gas pumps out front, and the name of the joint was Filler Up. Walked in, the little place was half convenience store and half little sub shack. And I thought, well, I better eat now. God knows what it's going to be like up the road. And then I saw this sign that said, homemade cream of crab soup today. Oh, baby. And I looked at the guy and I said, that's really homemade cream of crab soup? Absolutely. Some people come all the way up here from Balmer just to get my cream of crab soup. I said, well, by God, set me up. So I got going again, got on that down that you went the white knuckle death grip on the steering wheel, and waiting for that telltale whoop, you know, as you know the ass end feels like it's going to let go or whatever. And I start thinking, that soup smelled really good. When am I going to get to eat it? And that's when I came to a halt at Hopewell Township, Pennsylvania, for the next 2 hours, and I got to enjoy my soup, and my God, was it good. It was the most delicious cup of soup I think I've ever had. And it wasn't one of those things where, you know, it was cream of crab soup because they had made it sitting next to a crab, and that was as close as... No, this thing had... It was full of fresh crab meat. Oh, God, it was so good. And I kept trying to come up with an excuse whereby I would go back in that direction and bring home a 5-gallon bucket to the family. But I didn't. And I didn't. So that was the good thing that came. But then at the end of the trip, the end of the rainbow, was the Progress PA conference. And Rich Smith had already done his show. I got there terribly, terribly late. But in enough time to see some of the better parts of the conference itself, because that's when the dinner kicked up. Got to meet Mark Carlin from Buzzflash, who is a genuinely nice human being, and we had a delightful, albeit brief, conversation about the future of liberal media in this country and various and sundry models for it. And then the big to-do of the night, and, you know, Pennsylvania Labor was there, AFL-CIO, steel workers, what have you, the paper ballot people, all kinds of folks were there. The nice big room full of folks. And the big blow-off to the evening was the comparison and contrast discussion featuring Arlen Specter and Joe Sestak. Joe Sestak being a member of the House of Representatives from Pennsylvania, who was running in the Pennsylvania primary for the Senate nomination to represent the Democratic Party, as is Senator Arlen Magic Bullet Specter. And poor Arlen looked like he was slipping a little bit. And, you know, frankly, you can't blame him if he was, because there he gets up on the stage, and here he, you know, this is a guy who's been doing politics since the mid-60s. And he's always been a Republican up until now. And there he is, and he's seen all these Republican rubber chicken dinners, and he's looked out into the crowds at the blue hairs, and people who talk with their teeth clenched, and say, oh, my God, Senator, you see what the liberals are doing to America. You know, that kind of stuff. And yet on that Saturday night, he stands up on that stage and he looks out into the crowd, and it's a Democratic crowd. And it's got, and you can just hear the internal monologue inside Arlen Specter's head going, my God, where did the brown people come from? When did they start letting these people be Republicans? I think there's a Jew. Is that a Muslim? I see a headscarf. And you could see Arlen Specter literally just rocked back a little bit on his heels, realizing that he was finally in a room that had people that looked like most of America in it. And Joe Sestak is so much, by far, the better man for the job for Pennsylvania and the better man for the nation, frankly, than Arlen Specter is. Oh my God, it's the difference between night and day. And yet there was Leo Girard, president of the United Steelworkers, clapping for old Arlen just as hard as he could clap. Woo-wee! Go Arlen, you damn Democrat, you! Woo-wee! Organized labor in Pennsylvania is squarely behind, if you can imagine it, Arlen Specter, the man who said early on that he didn't want nothing to do with no employee free choice act this time round, because it might hurt the economy. Oh, but he's told him that, you know, well, you know, if you just get me through the primaries, by God, I'll be right there for the employee free choice act. Right there. Never mind the fact that the Republicans will stop it dead in its tracks, and it won't matter if Arlen Specter's on board or not, and the fact that he's 9,000 years old and makes Methuselah look young, and literally invented the magic bullet theory in the assassination of John Kennedy. How long he's been at this game. And never mind the fact that the reason he's a Democrat in the first place is because his polling numbers were running behind this right-wing, mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking, freakazoid, gotta-protect-the-babies-in-the-womb type, name of Pat Toomey in Pennsylvania, who is crazier than a sprayed roach or a broke-back snake. Never mind all of that. Labor is going to be behind Arlen Specter. Whew, sickening. And there were a bunch of real liberals and real progressives in the crowd who were just, what? Because Joe Sestak is so much by far the better man. Well, I don't know if he's got the temperament to sit in the United States Senate. Yeah, I don't either, buddy. I didn't know. I don't know either. I mean, you know, he only ran a carrier fleet. That's pretty frivolous when in comparison to sitting in the new United States Senate now, ain't it? It's a sad thing to sit and watch organized labor shoot itself in the foot. Arlen Specter? Really? And again, this guy was trailing Pat Toomey in the polls, running against the guy in the primaries. And liberals in Pennsylvania think, what's going to happen to him running against him in the general? Oh, well, those good liberal Democrats will come out and keep Arlen in office. Okay, let's assume for a moment that they're correct. What then will Arlen do for good liberal Democrats? Oh, well, I was told, well, he's come out in favor of single payer. Do tell. Well, it's real easy to be in favor of single payer when you know it ain't going to even be offered up. You can be in favor of single payer when the fact of the matter is that the only time it's ever been mentioned in the history of the United States Senate was when Bernie Sanders offered an amendment that the Republicans then stomped on Harry Reid's toes until he screamed, "Ooh, quit it," and made Bernie Sanders withdraw his single payer amendment. That's real easy to be a single payer kind of guy in those circumstances, don't you think? I do. Real easy to be pro-labor when you know that Blanche Lincoln's out there and she will filibuster all by her lonesome self on behalf of the corporation and the profit motive at Walmart. Any Employee Free Choice Act, it's real easy to be pro-Employee Free Choice Act and make that kind of promise. Well, you know, I promised you, and I'm still for it, boys, but you know what? We just can't seem to get a vote on it. Isn't that a damn shame? But I tell you what, I sure appreciate you keeping my solidly right-wing ass in the Senate again. Remember, this is the guy who gave us Clarence Thomas. Arlen Specter is. Yeah, really. Remember Anita Hill? Remember the character assassination of Anita Hill? That was Arlen Specter's doing. Samuel Alito? Yeah, he's on Specter's tab, too. John Roberts? Same. Citizens United decision? Arlen Specter had as much to do with that as any human being in the United States Senate. Yeah, really. As you can see, I have been far too long away from the microphone. I was there Thursday and Friday, and Guy and I were doing God's work and everything. But it's hard to sit there and do a lot of long form talk when it's this when you're getting guests just bang past your chair. And it was really kind of fun for me because as much telephone work as I do, it's always pleasant to look across the table and carry on a conversation with someone with you got a mic and they got a mic and there's going to be some truth coming out. There were wonderful people that I met there. But there is something good, something mighty, mighty good about being to home and to be back behind one's favorite microphone in one's favorite rickety chair in one's favorite overcrowded studio with one's favorite telephone processing unit taking telephone calls from the people who really matter in this whole discussion. Me bloviating, not so much. Every time I think about the demise of Air America, I think about the fact that what we're doing here, the conversation that gets engendered here, is so doggone important. Every time there's one less voice, it's a little more important, the conversations we have. Check in the email box. Marty says, as little as I listen to Air America, I will miss RFK Jr.'s and Mike Papantonio's Ring of Fire. That's about all that was left to listen to on Air America by the time they tanked. And you know what? They've got a standing offer to run the show here if they so desire, and I would welcome them to do so. Maybe they'll just do it independently. I don't know. And Ron and Raleigh. A Chevy HHR? Oh, Bob, I'm so sorry. What a POS. I'm glad you made it home. Yeah, I'm not the guy to be advertising Chevy HHRs. No, not even a little itsy bit. Not even. So, yeah. But that's where we are this evening. And you know, on the way, I finally drove in today because I was a real wimp about things, but being as how I wasn't driving my own vehicle, I felt it incumbent upon me not to take undue risks, and I knocked off last night when we got to full-on dark, and I couldn't tell what was stains on the road versus what was glare ice, black ice on the road, and that, you know. So I knocked off and quit at a cheap motel and counted myself among the lucky. So I drove home this morning, and who did I get? You know, and again, click, and it doesn't just apply to, like, the outlying areas of York, PA. Click, click, right wing, right wing, right wing, right wing. These people are totally disconnected from reality. I heard some wingnut having a hissy about trying Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and potentially executing him. I thought these were the execution bunch, but now all of a sudden they're was it Chinless Mitch McConnell? What is his name? Addison Mitch McConnell or something like that? I forget. He's some sort of a transplant. But the Senate Minority Leader, who said that who referred to trying Khalid Sheikh Mohammed in an actual constitutional sort of trial as a show trial. Did I hear that right? These were the guys who were all in favor of the kangaroo courts, you know, the military commissions, and thought, well, they'll get plenty of justice there. They'll get the rough justice they deserve. And my God, yeah, they will shoot their, hang their, well, hang their ass and then shoot them while they're hanging there and draw and quarter them, carry their bones away and gnaw on their flesh and suck the marrow out as it roasts slowly over an open fire. I thought that was that crowd. But then I hear some wingnut this morning talking about, you know, the Obama administration. They're going to have show trials in New York City. New York City. Yeah. Oh, and this in from Reverbo. Arlen is forever on the vanguard. He seems to now be demonstrating the single brain cell theory. Oh, he was not on his game Saturday night. But it didn't matter. He's already anointed and coronated and folded and spindled and mutilated and got himself some union endorsements and, yeah, all done. Instead of having a guy like Joe Sestak who, you know, I've met the guy. He doesn't make me feel like I need to go and take a shower after I've shaken his hand. Arlen Specter does. Anita Hill. Yeah. You don't like the Citizens United decision? You think, and by the way, have you been by Facebook? Did you join up with the Impeach Alito and Roberts Now page? Did you become a fan or join up or whatever it is one does on Facebook? Did you do that? Could you do that? It'd be nice to put a little weight behind that and get that thing moving. But yeah, you don't like Citizens United? Well, you've got Arlen Specter to thank for it. And we all do. In the email bag from William, love the road trip story. I've been there before in the late 50s through the 70s, traveling from Chicago to Tampa, always in the 50s in the family 57 Mercury station wagon. Well, before there were much of interstate highways and being a picky eater, I'd stay in the car when we'd roll up to a covered house with a sign that simply said, "Eat." I sat in the car looking out as an axe head visible over a fence, and it came down, and I saw feathers fly into the air. Once my family came out, I asked them what they had. Oh, great chicken, if they only knew. They were city folk. I had my fill of orders from places like this, over easy eggs that never stopped quivering on the plate, or A cook missing all but the thumb on one hand, roads that existed but were nowhere to be found on the map. Yeah. Yeah, it sounds like William's been on that road. It was more than a little creepy. And Ron adds, what did you and Guy get to eat, beef or pork? By the way, Ring of Fire is still on Saturdays at 3 o'clock. Look on radiotime.com in the progressive section. So that's where they went. Okay. Radiotime.com, 3 o'clock, Sundays, progressive section. It's good to know. Very good to know. Well, you know, Guy, it's either beef or pork. And a little of both somewhere along the way. Now, let's, enough shilly-shallying about. There's more storytelling to do. Yeah, I came home listening to Glenn Beck. And if you think he's nuts on TV, you haven't heard crazy. I mean, clown car, floppy shoes, red bulbous nose, crazy. Until you have heard him on the radio. I mean, nuts. Loony nuts. Dangerously so at that. Today he was pissed off at Arianna Huffington. Hey. Let's go to the phone and see what's shaking. Hey, welcome to the program.
I'm here.
Hey, Susan.
I have a nominee for the Moran of the week.
Oh, do please.
Senator Lamar Alexander of Tennessee.
And?
He is calling for the resignation of Attorney General Eric Holder. Why? Because the Christmas Day bomber was Mirandized. He followed the Constitution. Therefore, according to Alexander, he therefore needs to be out of a job.
Okay, we're going to have to work through this again. Mirandizing Abdul-Mateen, that guy?
Yeah.
Mirandizing him is a... What?
Yeah, I know. That's what I thought. I had to read it four or five times. According to Lamar Alexander, because at some point, this dude was informed of his rights or the charges against him in a trial setting as required by the Constitution, Alexander wants the Attorney General of the United States to resign because apparently Lamar Alexander figures he did something very wrong by following the Constitution. Say what?
Do I really have to start drinking this early?
Can I help? Can I join? I need a drink. I need some drugs. I need drugs.
No, I just...
I have drugs.
Well, you know, but it's our buddy Luke who refers to him as the Plaid Avenger.
Yeah, I think the Plaid has gone to his brain. Either that or maybe since they are allowing Haggis back into the United States, maybe he got some bad Haggis, you know, mad cows melting his brain. Oh, God.
Yeah.
You're following the Constitution, so that's reason to be fired.
But it's, that kind of works in line, Susan, with everything I was hearing today. I just had brain cells just flying out the window with these people, these right-wing hacks and flacks and zipper heads talking about how we, I mean, that business about how obscene it was for Obama to say that, they were paraphrasing it as Obama saying that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed would fry. But these are the guys who, you know, who want fries with that.
Uh-huh.
You know, hearing, later in the day, hearing, Hearing any right-winger piss and moan about the deficit, and there was plenty of it today because, you know, Barack Obama sent his budget across, and it had to be delivered with forklifts like it was the first time that ever happened.
Well, actually, it was the first time they had two wars that were actually in the budget instead of cooking the books like Bush did it. I could say something about that, too.
I know. Well, do please.
You know, where I come from, if you leave out massive expenditures, such as two wars and a massive drug program that you never bothered to pay for and stuff like that, that'll end you up in Leavenworth doing hard time.
That indeed it will.
Or in my case, Walla Walla, which is even worse, for embezzlement. George Bush.
Well, and that's what I mean. Yeah, these guys are deficit hawks now?
Yeah.
Where were they when the deficit was being run up? Because it all didn't just happen in the last year.
And I really wish they would quit. I know it's never going to happen. But they keep saying, you know, we need to do a tax deduction, you know, like Reagan did it. St. Bonnie Reagan was responsible for the biggest tax increase in this nation's history. Of course, people don't.
But, but then again, that's from the same school of thought, Susan, where Fox cuts off the last 20 minutes of Obama's tête-à-tête with the Republicans.
Yeah.
Did you see that Roger Ailes got called on that? Why did you cut off the president 20 minutes before it was over? Nobody else did that because people trust Fox News.
Yeah, right. Anybody looked up the 14 points of fascism lately?
I know.
It's illuminating reading one point that is, one item that is hopeful. Gates is going to announce that they're going to stop enforcing the Don't Ask, Don't Tell that throws gays out of the military for being denounced by third parties.
Right. Yeah, I did see that. That's helpful, but why not just get rid of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell, period?
I agree. But right now, I'll take anything I can get. Because let's face it.
That's what we wound up with the healthcare thing too. The Medicaid buy-in is the most important part for me. What I learned in those couple of days in Washington about the fact that the asset tests will go away.
That just blew me away. I sat there with this great big old grin on my face when I heard that.
That's going to bring. I mean, if we can get it through the conference committee and get everything all hammered out and do a reconciliation vote, that will be the most important part of it. Period.
When I heard that.
Although there's a statistic out there that says, I heard it on some right wing gas bag station on the way. 34 state legislatures have pending legislation that would ban the government takeover of health care.
Yeah, and they're all in the South. And if they want to do
there ain't 34. Susan, there ain't 34 states in the South.
They're in the South and in the red states. They're all in.
But it's also, that's just counting legislation. That doesn't necessarily mean the wingnut will succeed.
Exactly. And if they want to let their people die, well, then that will come back and bite them in the rear. I can't stop them. I can only do what I can do. The karma's going to come back and bite them, not me. But I have to tell you that when I heard that about the Medicaid, I just sat there and grinned and suddenly decided I'm going to start supporting this bill.
I think it makes it supportable as far as I'm concerned.
Me too. Me too.
Hard not to under those circumstances, because you know what? You get health care under those circumstances, it would be awfully hard for Mississippi Stan and Alabama Stan and Texas Stan and all of those other. It'd be hard for them to take it away after 3 years of having it. They might have trouble on their hands. It might put the Republican Party into the political wilderness for a while.
Yeah, they'll have a bloody revolution if they try and take it away after 3 years. But it's just, yeah, I heard that. I heard the person you were talking to say that, and I just sat there with a big old grin. Because how many times have I heard stories of this little old man or this little old lady having to literally beggar themselves to get their spouse health care under Medicaid?
Yeah, I know.
And
I know.
It just broke my heart. And I just, that's just so cool.
Oh, and Baron, yeah, the asset tests are brutal. Pardon me, do you have a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out of? Well, you can't have Medicaid.
Exactly. I once tried for Medicaid.
What? You don't have the window, but you do have the pot? Still can't have Medicaid. Can't have Medicaid till you don't have the pot.
I once tried for the Oregon version of Medicaid, and I think I was something like $16 over.
Yeah, and this from Marty's, he says, with regard to the don't ask, don't tell stuff, he said if Obama was, it sounds like they're aiming for legislation to overturn don't ask, don't tell. If Obama was after that, I'll have to give him some credit. If Obama just overturns Clinton's EO, the next president could overturn it, like the political football known as Mexico City rules regarding foreign health care and women's reproductive rights. Yeah, exactly. Hey, Susan, I got to roll on. We've got them stacked up. Maybe off to an might be off and running for tonight. All right. You take care.
Love taking.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. News Ninja Susan from Columbia City, Oregon, and rolling onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brother Bob.
Albert.
How are we today?
Brother Albert.
Yes,
what's
sir.
That? Yeah.
Oh, my question is those little handle holes in the cardboard refrigerator box count as a window? That's my question.
Yeah, well, you know, yes, it does, and in the asset testing, that's you own too much.
Yeah. What about like a big gulp cup? Is that
you're over asseted.
Jeez, must be rough. I'm telling you right now.
Well, I'm not trying to elicit sympathy or anything. My sister in Alabama couldn't get Medicaid, and she had neither the pot nor the window.
Yeah. Yeah. Filthy rules, aren't they?
Yeah.
Filthy, filthy, filthy. I'll tell you, you know, I gotta say, I did admire Obama going into that den of filth. And, well, I saw that. I actually got to watch that. For some reason or another, I couldn't get any reliable stream of the State of the Union, so I should probably catch up on that. But I did happen to watch that just lashing he gave those freaks. And it is amazing, you know, how, in one sense, has Air America's demise, you know, as they tried to, I don't even know, copy the right-wing hate machine and in the same way that they pay each other and the way that they do business and the stupid things that they've done in order to make that fail.
Right.
You know, and, you know, it was kind of refreshing, you know, to hear Obama come out and, you know, essentially just call the rhetoric out. You know, and I know we're all guilty of it because, well, let's be straight, you know, Bush is a fascist and that's how it is. You know, the guy's a war criminal.
Yeah, kind of hard to run from that, isn't it?
It is.
If you're reality-based.
That's all I'm saying about that. You know, I mean, and, well, yeah, sure, Obama's a Democrat. You know, like, the Democrats aren't really, I mean, that's why they lost Massachusetts. They lost Massachusetts. To me, from what I've read and what I've seen, my gut feeling on it, Massachusetts was taking away the GameCube or the PlayStation 3 from the Democrats because they're not listening. And I hope that, you know, Obama can do something to rub some liniment on the Democrats' concrete ankles so they can be a little bit more have a little bit more dexterity in their movements to what we really want in terms of, you know, where we're going in this world. To me, that speech that he made in front of their little retreat, it sounded like, man, he would really love to do a whole lot of things, but man, he can't even do the most basics. He can't even just, you know, open up, you know, these little tiny programs. I mean, like, you know, you saw with the, you know, I read half of that health bill, and yeah, while, you know, removing, you know, those preconditions and all that other stuff, you know, a lot of those things were really good steps and common sense things that we had to do. You know, it wasn't single payer, which is, you know, what we need. I mean, hell, this country pays $4,000, what is it, $4,000 per person? You know, and we rank 19th on the scale and 20th on this scale and 37th on that scale, 4 on this scale where, you know, you want a breast augmentation, woo-hoo, we're top 5. You know, but, you know, and it comes down to infant mortality rates in certain areas of this country and, you know, so on and so forth. Well, you know, there's major problems that we're spending way too much money on healthcare and not getting anything for it. It's like, you know, buying ShamWows all the time. You know, those things don't work for nothing. Worthless crap. Anyway, you know.
You sound like a guy who's tried a ShamWow.
Well, you had to. You know, I was washing the car and I saw it. It was like 99 cents. I'm like, oh, yeah. I'm a sucker for those TV things. I don't watch TV.
As seen on TV. Well, if it was seen on TV, well, golly, gotta have one.
I was always impressed by those car waxes and they light the car on fire. But anyway, you know, like, oh man, my car can survive a fire. Anyway, 1995 plus, you know, plus a ShamWow, that's a deal. Anyway, you know, when we sit here and look at what, you know, I just gotta say, you know, I was just listening to Noam Chomsky, who, you know, was talking about, a big surprise, right? Oh, I was listening to Noam Chomsky. Anyway, but he was talking about the Tea Parties and how, you know, the thing is about them is, see, now that Democrats have won and put back into, you know, pretty much, we had some pretty overwhelming, kind of 60 votes, man. We, you know, you thought we would have got something done. But,
well, you know, if we really had 60 votes, but...
Well, true, but, you know, we had enough votes to change some rules around a little bit, and we could have sat there and done... You know the Republicans wouldn't have stood for the things that we stood for. There ain't no way in hell. George Bush wouldn't have sat there and tried to cross party lines, even though we have enough mealy-mouthed dinos.
No, we have the Medicare prescription drug coverage legislation to show us what the Republicans would have done. They would have violated every one of their own rules, held the vote open, strong-armed, bribed, done whatever they had to do to get the votes they needed. Because that's what they did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so hopefully, I'm just saying, I don't know. I hope they start waking up. My God, just start waking up. Just do what we want you to do for 10 minutes.
And yet, out there is I don't know if you saw this. I found it via got a laugh over at the Political Carnival. Reference to a piece by Norm Ornstein over at the Washington Post, titled "A Very Productive Congress, Despite What the Approval Ratings Say." And what his argument is, he says that, as it turns out, Obama's first year has been the most productive first year of any president since Lyndon Johnson.
Yeah, I think he's only second to FDR.
Which is kind of surprising, because it doesn't feel that, you know...
True.
That doesn't feel like there's that much there. But the direct quote, as I found it, says, quoting Got a Laugh, Norm Ornstein argues that despite poor approval rates, that, quote, this Democratic Congress is on a path to become one of the most productive since the Great Society 89th Congress in 1965-66, and Obama already has the most legislative successes of any modern president, and that includes Ronald Reagan and Lyndon Johnson. The deep dysfunction of our politics may have produced public disdain, but it has also delivered record accomplishment. Who'd have thunk?
Yeah, no, I think that expresses, and you know, it illustrates where, how deep of a hole we fell into. You know, it might have been one of them real gradual, soft, you know, declines, and you know, all them, you know, the 80s and 90s and 2000, and you know, we I'm the same way. I know that intellectually they've done things.
Today in delivering his budget, Obama said something along the lines of, if you recall, under the Clinton administration, they cleared the deficit and started delivering surpluses. And we had surpluses in 2000, which we then squandered over the last 8 years or something along those lines. And it didn't take any time at all before the wingnuts were out there. When is he going to stop blaming Bush? Well, who the hell do you blame? And is it blaming Albert simply to mention the guy who was at the helm when the ship hit the iceberg? Is that blaming? Or is that simply taking account of facts as they exist as opposposed to wishful thinking?
Yeah, that's kind of...
I mean, because we've got the wishful thinking thing on the other end, too, you know, with Dana Perineal saying that there was never a terrorist attack on Bush's watch and, that kind of miserable insanity. That's wishful thinking.
Mm.
Now, a lot of us wish Bush hadn't been president on September 11, 2001. But he was. And that's when the attack happened. And there was a surplus when he took office on January 20th, 2001.
Mm-hmm.
And he then blew it on tax cuts for his pal.
Mm-hmm. His base. But see, that brings you kind of right back to kind of what Noam Chomsky was talking about. You know, they do, you know, like he's talking about the Tea Party people and how we shouldn't ignore them. Because one thing that they're doing is they're giving answers. See, and Perino, she can have, you know, these, and Rudy Giuliani, he, Mr. 9/11 himself made that freaking fumble, you know, but the thing
yeah,
is...
Yeah, well, they're giving answers, but it's the, but Albert, it's the question of the quality of the answers. I mean, if I ask you why we have deficits and you're a teabagger and you say, kryptonite.
Yeah. No, they're wrong answers. They are 100%. They're 100% incorrect, but they're there. And where the Republicans and where they're most dangerous is when they're in that victim status and they're in panic mode and victim mode. And, you know, they paint themselves into these, you know, impossible corners with fear and paranoia. You know, the problem is that's like red meat, you know, for their little followers that sit there and, you know, have no problem gutting themselves just so their masters can eat. You know, because one day they might be a master, so they might, you know, need that tax cut when they're, you know, they don't want no estate tax because one day they might be worth $80 billion or something.
Yep, day after they win the lottery. I mean, after all, Powerball states are getting Mega Millions, and Mega Million states are getting Powerball, so that's two more chances a week for you to become a multimillionaire. It could happen to you.
It certainly
could. And then, by God, where are you going to be if there's a death tax? Huh? Where are you going to be?
I'll be dead. I'll be with Jesus.
Oh, yeah, and then there's a great line. I was with Rick Smith early yesterday morning. We were working on some tech stuff at his studio, and he was talking about. He said, "I will not go to Chick-fil-A, you know, because it's a bunch of right-wing miserable bastards." And I said, "Yeah, me neither, neither." And I said, "And you know what it is? You know what it is that makes that stupid little piece of breaded chicken breast so damn tasty?" And just as quick, anybody who's not listening to Rick Smith on the weekends is missing a treat, because Rick be quick. And just as quick as you want, you know what it is that makes those little breaded chicken breasts so damn tasty? And Rick goes, what, Jesus?
Mm-hmm.
But it's actually the powdered sugar that they add to the breading mix.
The sweetness of Jesus.
Yeah, it's Jesus sweet.
Jesus sweet. No, honestly, though, so that's why I think, in a sense, you know...
Nutri-Jesus, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's about that, isn't it? Well, I mean, hell, those Haitians are, you know, making pacts with the devil, and that's why they all, you know, 100 to 200,000 deserve death.
Right, yeah.
You know, they're hanging out with the devil. That's the kind of answers that these people dish out, man. I mean, you know, we got to be able to beat that. Come on.
But coming down the road today, Albert, and hearing Glenn Beck say with what I assume was a straight face that Van Jones is a communist?
Well,
and you know who picked him up? You know who picked him up? The Center for American Progress picked up Van Jones. That's where he went. There's a lot of communists.
Communists. You know, I'm just going to...
But the other thing that he's done, have you noticed that he's picked up on the... He's figured out the word progressive. Just as quickly as we went from liberal to progressive, he started trying to dirty up the word progressive.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, no mountains too high for these, you know, these deplorable scum.
No swamp too deep.
Exactly. I mean, they have no problems with any of this kind of stuff. I mean, they... You know, I'm glad he says the crap he does. It's so easy to dismantle. It's so easy to just, to sit there and, I'm not talking about, I'm talking about one-on-one type things, four-on-one type things where you're having a conversation with a small group of your friends or neighbors or so on and so forth. You know, because really that's the real impact. That's where we're going to make the biggest impact is, on these people that, we know and talk to and so on and so forth. Like there's a local bookstore that I try to, trying to get my kids up to speed on different cultures and so on and so forth. So I go to the local bookshop and, pick up a book and I sat there and I was like, oh, and she's like, what? Well, what? I'm like, Glenn Beck's Christmas sweater? I mean, what is this? She's like, I know. Like, they send them to us, we have to put them out, So, even in, little independent shops, they got this crap. That doesn't mean it's selling. There was...
No, and in fact, there's a story out there. You're absolutely... I hate to break in, but you're going to absolutely love this.
Okay.
Speaking of crazy little books of insanity sitting on otherwise normal, self-respectable bookshelves, going rogue, Caribou Barbie's little book. It turns out that Sarah Pack. Yeah, the Political Action Committee. Sarah Pack. Yeah, Sarah Pack spent $63,000 buying Going Rogue. Now, Grant, now dig it. I mean, this is a great little dodge. Pay attention, you three-card Monty fans out there. So, you're Sarah Palin, and you've got yourself a little political action committee, right? And, of course, since you can't actually have that money, it's supposed to go to political activities. You can't just dip into the till and head off to needless markup naked with a credit card. There are rules. So you can't just, dip into the till. You just can't. It's not even the Republican that can't. So instead, you write a little book called Going Rogue. Male elephant, rogue elephant. I'm sorry, I can't help it. And so you look over at yourself, at your political action committee, and you say, hey, Sarah Pack, there's a great new book out. It's called Going Rogue by me. And Mama needs a new pair of shoes. Or 100. So what you're going to do is you're going to buy several copies of my book at retail, $63,000 worth, as a matter of fact, and the money's going to come back to me, and it'll all qualify on the New York Times bestseller list as sales of my book. Ha!
Yeehaw. Rogue is a perfect name for her. These people are so stupid. These are the people with Freedom Prize. Remember that. Rogue. She's a pig-licking. Rogue. Rogue is a rogue.
Yeah, she's mavericky.
Mavericky. Well, rogue. When I hear rogue, I'm thinking pirate. You really want to be identified as a Republican or a pirate? I mean, granted, it's one and the same, and especially,
Hey, remember, it's the absence of pirates that caused global warming. We all know. The Flying Spaghetti Monster told us so.
So, hey, there's a lot of money up there. Someone's got to take it. It's just going to waste. It's getting stale. Hey, that's just, that's laundering. That's the kind of things good old Poppy Bush did with Noriega and them Contras and all that stuff. Didn't they do a lot of that? Yeah, they're good at that, Bob. They're real good at that laundering. of greenbacks.
Oh, they are. I mean, listen to how this dodge worked. ABC News reported this. The former Alaska governor and 2008 Republican vice presidential candidate had her political organization, that probably sounded like an internet glitch, didn't it? Well, I just can't talk. Had her political organization spend more than $63,000 on what her reports describe as, quote, books for fundraising donor fulfillment. The payments went to HarperCollins, her publisher, and in some instances to HSP Direct, a Virginia-based direct mail fundraising firm that serves a number of well-known conservative politicians and pundits. You ever wonder how it is that, you know, Ann Coulter can put the purple crayon between her toes and write on the wall for a few days, and the next thing you know, it's a New York Times bestseller? And it's got that little dagger symbol right next to it?
Mm-hmm.
That means all of these books were purchased in bulk?
Yep.
Well, this is how. Sarah Pack spent another $8,000 on colorful bookmarks. Because, you know, Republicans need colorful bookmarks. We bought two books last year. One of them had the green colorful bookmark, and the other one had the red colorful bookmark. Where's the red colorful bookmark, Marge? $8,000 on colorful bookmarks designed by a Nashville-based event branding firm. And then her committee paid her publisher $20,000 for what appears to have been the cost of sending her personal photographer and another aide along on her book tour. You'll notice they don't say bus tour, because remember it was a bus tour, except she went on her bus tour on Samaritan's duffel bag, it's Samaritan's purse, on their jet.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's price cost plus. You know, these are the people that brought us that. So, you know. Remember that? Price cost plus. I'll never forget these things. I'll never forget these things are ingrained and burned and seared into my consciousness when I hear. I mean, how can they? That's an albatross across their neck. And everything they do, hey, we know this. You know, these people aren't bestsellers. And sure, somebody will buy two copies of her book to meet this person. But I think we've all seen Max Blumenthal and a couple of other, TPM, was that one? Someone of those people. You know, they made videos, you know, going up and seeing those, you know. I mean, if you haven't seen those videos, interviewing the Palin Book Club blah, blah, blah people that went to get her autograph, oh, my God, you must watch those. You just absolutely must. And sure, put on the suit and get ready for the decontamination shower afterwards, but, oh, those are must-views. You have to see those things. And it's kind of showing that they're not really that scary of, you know, they're scary because they're so stupid, but they're not scary in terms of something intimidating. These people are easily dismantled, easily, you know, overwhelmed by just the common, you know, common perception of truth. You know, these Glenn Becks and all these people, they're fake. These people are holograms. They don't, they don't care about losing money. You know, they'll sit there and yimmer and yammer about, you know, Air America, and sure, it failed. Yes, it did. Blah, 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 blah. And there's a billion different things we can get into about why. However, you know, when are we going to talk about Murdoch? You know, the Post losing $1 billion a year, and crazy Meng Young, the savior of the earth, Reverend Moon over there with his Washington Times. How much money has that place lost? They must have a printing press in the basement. They've lost so much money. They must be the Fed or something. Now, that's one, speaking of the Fed, that's one thing that in terms of recent news that has come out is pretty much, you know, that have also just galls me. You know, Bernanke hasn't held the task for these things, and, you know, I don't understand how sometimes you could take Bush's people and then just keep rolling with them. That's one thing about Obama that really does bug me. That he, you know, we can't play their game. We can't do their things without being dirty and filthy. Like, you know, Bob Kincaid can't write a book, and then the Bob Kincaid Pack Foundation sits there and buys all the copies up, and then Bob's a number one bestseller. I don't know. That's like cheating. I don't understand how people can have victories like that and think it means something.
Well, and there are numbers to go with all of that, Albert, but depending on how much she paid for the, how much Sarah Pack paid for the book, if they paid retail, at $63,000, retail would have bought them 2,173 copies. If they bought them at the steeply discounted Amazon rate of $13.50 a copy, it would have gotten them 4,000, wait for it, 666 copies.
Pray for retail.
Never pay retail.
But then
I know.
Sean Hannity and called the Palin and all these other freaks. You know, then they sell the books. These people buy them up in bulk and then they give them away for three for a penny.
Right. As a premium. If you subscribe to World Wingnut Daily, we'll send you your free copy of Going Rogue.
In hardcover, nonetheless.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Not paperback. Hardcover.
With little, you know, with a Crayola scrawl by little calculus, little baby calculus. Or sign,
got
or
so
what?
Much to do.
I know. Albert, it's great hearing from you. It's been a while.
Oh, I know. I'm sorry. It's just, yeah, 2 6-year-olds, man. Oof. Oof.
Yeah, 2 6-year-olds and a brilliant winter, a brutal winter.
Yeah, it's snowing again. Yeah. What are we gonna do? I'm going back into hibernation. But you take care.
But see, you have the good sense to stay off the road when they're covered with snow. I'm stupid. I go out and play in it.
Yeah.
And I mean, whether it was the District of Columbia, the state of Virginia, the state of Maryland, PennDOT, the ever reliable PennDOT was caught with its pants down on this.
Really?
And everybody knew it was coming.
Yeah,
But it was really weird. It was like passing some sort of line of demarcation because, boom, long about York, Pennsylvania, no more snow, not even any on the ground, not a flake, not a flurry, not nothing. And that's how that wreck happened, is all those people were zooming along and then, oh, Marge, you know.
Yeah, no, I've actually had that experience. You know, no, we happen to pay a fair amount of taxes here in Wisconsin, and one thing I can just say, you know, even the poorest counties, which I actually happen to live in, they have their snow budget, you know, because, you know, we get hammered on, and we get, not only that, we get the rain, and then all of a sudden it's negative. You know what that is, and that's ice. And so they do try to handle that. So we do have that.
And that's why why I quit at dark last night. I needed one of these days. I need an eye appointment. But beyond that, it was dark, and I couldn't tell what was ice and what weren't.
Discretion said,
Bob, quit for the night.
Yeah, that's not fun. Then you got these Jaguars with their four-wheel drives, and they think, you know, oh, I got four-wheel drive, I'm all right. You know, if you got four-wheel drive on ice, it don't matter. You know, four-wheel drive just tends to get you stuck in places that you couldn't get stuck in two-wheel drive. But,
well, that's the thing. All those vehicles I saw with the 45-degree folded front-end hoods,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
were almost all of them four-wheel drive SUVs. Oh, well, you know, Eileen, we'll be okay. We've got the four-wheel drive out.
Mm-mm. Yeah, no. I try to stay inside. It's just
Every now and then you feel you feel that little let go, and you know, it's one of those little butt puckering moments where whoop, yeah,
And as I've described to you, like we live in a small example of where you do, and so there's a lot of hills and a lot of cliffs to nowhere, you know, cliffs to the other side, we should say, you know, and those guardrails really, you know, they're pretty. Sometimes they're just wires. So I don't like feeling that, and I even have Quattro, and it's like no.
Yeah, I was kind of wanting a Zamboni Saturday.
Oh, I don't blame you. I tell you, these roads is. That's another thing. You know, speaking of real roads, like Wisconsin.
By the way, that was socialist salt.
Naturally, probably, you know. Socialist salt. What are you talking about, socialist salt?
No, that was socialist salt being spread on the roads. It wasn't spread by the free market. That was some socialist salt because it was going down for everybody, not just the wealthy who could afford it.
Yeah, we can't have that, can we?
Oh, no. Socialist sand, and here in West Virginia, socialist cinders, and yeah.
Sad. It's sad. Back to the thing. We have answers. We just have to keep saying them, because our answers are more correct than their answers. So we just keep on keeping on. Don't let take any guff from these swine, and that's what they are, and I hope Obama's little meeting with them kind of, you know, drew a line in the sand saying, listen, you know, shape up, or maybe we have to elevate this, escalate this to the next level.
And, you know, I'm hoping that that's what that was. That was, okay, now let's behave and play nice, people, or we'll get this health care bill through with reconciliation. And once people have it and realize you oppose them having it, it's going to be a bad world for you to live. And, you know, that's what he meant when he said, when you just oppose me for the sake of opposing me, that didn't leave you a lot of room. And it was so beautiful how he, I mean, I was proud of him. It was beautiful how he put it, put the ball in their corner. He didn't say, you know, that doesn't leave me any room to negotiate with you. He said, that doesn't leave you any room to negotiate with moi.
Exactly. Exactly.
You're the ones in the corner, dummies.
Yeah, and what have they done with the ball since he's given it to them? Fumble, 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 fumble. And I like fumbles in the end zone. You know, I mean, and the thing is, it's like it's almost like it's too easy and the Democrats aren't jumping on it. It's like, let them try again. Let them try again. And eventually we're going to have to sit there and someone's going to have, you know, some defensive line's going to have to drop on it because this is getting ridiculous.
Yeah, it's not going to squirt away. It's not going to keep squirting away.
We got to score. Right? When we got the opportunity to score, we got to score. You know, it just sometimes it's like sometimes the Democrats and it's like a bad TV show. You know, it's just like, what the hell are you doing? What are you doing? You know, we got to take care of this. You know, like we don't have time for this. Just we don't have time. We don't have time for this crap. We don't have time for this at all. You know how many ways I could sit here and break it down. I'm not going to get into a five-hour dialogue over it, but we don't have time. The clock is ticking. And, you know, when he said about leaving, you know, a deficit for our, you know, the generation, the Medicare issues and all these other things, you know, you see the Medicare problem. Bob, what's the solution to it? Well, we kind of have to get rid of Medicare, don't we? Eventually, we can't sustain that. So what should we do? I don't know. Maybe move to a universal health system. I don't know. Maybe start.
See, that just makes so much sense.
But
I don't trust Arlen Specter when he says he's a universal single payer guy now. I just don't.
I'd have to hear what Dennis Kucinich says about that.
Oh, and by the way, email coming in from David in Tennessee. He says, having lived in Tennessee, Georgia, Wisconsin, and Oregon, and driven a lot in 15 other states, Wisconsin had the best highway maintenance I have ever encountered.
The what?
Best highway maintenance I have ever encountered. So, yeah, but then again, remember, you know, it's Wisconsin, so, you know, that's probably salt with an extra dose of socialism.
Yeah, I think what we're using is some brine now. Actually, the best that I've run into is in Canada, but... Yeah, the Wisconsin's not so bad. We do all right. But we pay for it, so.
But the cost is spread out over the entirety, theoretically at least, over the entirety of the population, all of whom benefit from not sliding into the ditch in their Chevy HHR.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
Well, you know, I mean.
What a little POS that thing really is. Ron and Raleigh nailed it. That thing's just junk. And, you know, you take 6'2" me with a top coat on, you know, which is like two extra inches on either side, and you put me in that little go-kart seat. Me and Rick Smith in the front seat of that thing yesterday, we had to run by it, get a wire. It was funny. I mean, there was no room. I mean, these things are made for tiny people, like, you know, the feet, 5'5" and down. But anyway, I digress. But no, it is awfully good hearing from you, and I'm glad you did. I know what it is. You know, you got, they're 6 years old now. Has it been that long, the twins?
That's Bob. Six. You know, reading and writing and crayons. And I thought I had, they would go through, what do you call those things? A ream of paper, 500 sheets, those printer papers. And they go through that a week. Now it's like every couple of days. This house needs a fire.
Albert, take care, my brother.
All right, brother. You take care, too, and I'll catch you around.
All right, later. Thanks.
Oh, and hey, let Ferg know. He's a good little zombie slayer. Jump back on.
I will. He crashed the other night, and I told him it had to stay crashed until I got home. But I will. That will mean a lot to him. He's having a whale of a good time playing with you. And thanks for the comment at Alternet.
Oh, most certainly. Always, Bob. Always. You take care, brother.
All right. Later. Bye now.
Right, bye bye.
Brother Albert, the sage of Southwest Wisconsin, and moving onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's up?
You've been talking about this Danny Goldberg blog post on Alternet.
Yeah, and I realize it's got some age under it, apparently.
Yeah, because...
But it was new to me.
Yeah, it was new to you, but it was posted on a blog called Down with Tyranny, as I put on your Facebook page. But here's the thing. The comments are epic. Epic. Because first, some Air America listeners read Morning Sedition listeners, since Danny Goldberg canceled that show.
Well, and he referenced that in the article, too.
Because that was the granted, he also killed Unfiltered and brought Springer to the network, you know, which he tried to say is, I made Rachel Maddow a star, which is complete garbage. But anyway, first, Morning Sedition listeners were getting all mad with him and using some of the fun words, and it's like he tried to respond. Then, one of Morning Sedition's producers, Brendan P.W. McDonald, he replied, and he tore the man a new one. Just laid it out. Just totally laid it out. And then a couple of anonymous Air America people and one of the writers, comedy writers, tore into him. And then Jonathan Larson tore into him and said, the last one was, I gotta go. I need to work on Countdown tonight. You know, a little dig, a particular dig at the whole Rachel thing, because if anyone can claim having made Rachel a TV star, it'd probably be Larson, because guess who probably brought Rachel on the Countdown? You think?
Yeah.
You know, and it's just hilarious. And
the thing is, I think Goldberg does make an overarching valid statement. Somewhere along the way, he says that Air America went on the air underfunded in the first place, made stupid financial decisions, and then whatever progressive entities were backing it wanted a return on investment in 2 years' time.
Oh, certainly, but the thing is that they would, that network was, Goldberg is the one that turned, they were, start, that network was totally starting to at least get its footing. Certainly not a moneymaker, but when Goldberg started, that network was starting to finally get its bearings, and it was starting to be competent, and it was, the ratings were going up, and, you know, and then he goes in, and he just totally tears a hole in the schedule. I mean, and the thing is, the Morning Sedition ended the very day that Howard Stern ended, you know, terrestrial radio. And they desperately wanted to try and fill that gap because, you know, let's face it, no Howard Stern, everybody's looking for morning radio somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's what they were totally positioning for it, because I don't know if you would ever listen to it, but that show was just absolutely wild. And
yes, it was, and it had great potential.
Yeah.
But the other thing that Goldberg mentions that's true is that there were no damn stations to put it on.
Yeah.
And there was, you know, you've got to have talent. First of all, you've got... And this is one of those, in Radio Garrett, this is one of those chicken or the egg kind of arguments. Do you have to have the sales staff to support the talent, or do you have to have the talent and the programming for the sales staff to sell? And that's not one that we're going to solve, because no one ever has. But the fact of the matter is, they brought on high-dollar talent, and they had to pay Franken a fortune. It's a fact. And it was a fortune to Randy, and it was a fortune to... they paid, you know, big money. And then they didn't have any stations to put it on, which meant that they didn't have much in the way of a sales staff to sell their national avails. And I don't know that they had, I don't know who was doing the selling for them, but it wasn't terribly effective.
Well, apparently, because the attack that part of McDonald's, you know, response to Goldberg was that part of it was just the ineptness of them because, yes, they had no budget, but, like, when they finally got promotions for Morning Sedition on billboards and what have you in New York City, they wouldn't have what time it was on, for instance, or where you could, or the station, or it would be buried on the advertisements. I mean, that was part of his argument, and it's like, it was all, and then, of course, Goldberg demanding, you know, certain people that were his friends, such as Mark Green, you know, be on the show.
Yeah, and it's interesting. It's interesting. I did go by Down with Tyranny, and look, and there's a response in there from Goldberg saying that the original morning shows cost more than $1 million a year each, and there was no money to pay for them, no money to market them, no money to develop them. The original guy who put those shows on the air was a scammer. Yada yada yada. AAR lost its bite because there was no money to bite to find out what worked. And I'm sure there's more than enough blame to go around, but the fact of the matter is, in the end, you have to say that they did it, they tried to do it on a right-wing model, and the right-wing model does not work for progressive or liberal radio, period.
Yeah. True enough, especially in the end, they were totally trying to do it the right-wing model, because, I mean, at first, Franken's show was definitely probably, you can look at it as the biggest sign of blow, because ultimately history is going to say that he took that radio show in order to eventually run for the Senate. I mean, that was, especially once he moved it to Minnesota, that was the implication, because everybody except for Malloy was pretty much forced to go up to New York in their offices up there, irregardless, and then all of a sudden Franken moves the whole production to Minnesota. Is like, go, he's going for Senate, isn't he? And soon enough he did, because I mean that move had to cost Air America money, and you know, especially the buyout for his co-host, which was the reason why the show was good in the first place, to be perfectly honest. Because it's just, but yeah, it was just hilarious to read that. And then to find out that the Republicans, that they didn't initially want to put that little talk with Obama on TV.
Yeah.
That's how I first heard it. That was hilarious because, oh my God, that was a tearing apart. And even better was that MSNBC, instead of Countdown and Rachel Maddow's show, they just spent 2 hours with Olbermann, Natto, and old Tweety just ripping and, you know, analyzing it, and even Matthews was tearing into the Republicans. It was almost as good as that. Almost as good a TV as the actual speech. Because Matthews was just tearing into them, especially what's her face? Not Bachman, but her little blonde buddy there
Marsha Blackburn?
Yeah, Blackburn.
She's Tennessee. Really Bachman's Minnesota, Blackburn's Tennessee.
Yeah, I can never, yeah, but anyway, but yeah, he ripped into, he particularly, Matthews particularly ripped into her. It was funny. Oh, it was such funny TV.
Well, but, you know, I've looked through this stuff over at the original posting. But I have to, I have to say that there's truth in what Goldberg writes. But, you know, whether, about the internal workings of Air America, Garrett, I don't know. I certainly wasn't there. But about the externals, about how it wasn't supported, about who didn't line up, that's the absolute truth. And about how the so-called left, and I'm with Malloy on this, there's no left in the United States. Jiminy Christmas, please. You know, what might be called centrist social democrats or something along those lines. Those guys have not figured it out yet, Garrett. And they're gonna keep on losing their asses. I've seen it in so many places. You know, we'll give you $10,000 for grassroots organizing, and grassroots organizing is well and good. But, you know, I don't know how many cars were backed up, and this is just my little slice of reality, okay? I don't know how many cars were backed up on Interstate 83 in both directions on Saturday afternoon, but I do know that every last one of them was captive in one way or another to some form of media. You know, maybe somebody had a disc on. Maybe somebody was listening to an iPod. And, you know, that's the future. The iPod, the MP3 player, whatever, that's the future. But it's also it is not live.
Yeah. Because that's the thing. The original Air America lineup was what caused me to, was the tipping point in getting my first iPod. So I could listen to all of it, with the exception of Franken, because his show was restricted from being podcasted for some retarded reason, but everybody else was, and freaking ate that up. I mean, even the weekend shows were worth podcasting. I mean, and that was some serious information at a time when, you know, I had already figured it out that Bush was full of crap.
Well, based upon the conversation that we're having, Garrett, it seems like we need, if anything, the external end of it needs to be fleshed out more.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've experienced it. Guy James has experienced it. I think Malloy's experienced it, although I wouldn't speak for him in a million years. But trying to get liberals to support liberal programming is damn near impossible. I can't tell you the number of conversations I had once we were done with Radio Row in D.C. this past week. You know, you got to go. I'm a nicotine addict, and yes, I had to go outside to smoke. So there's that little hardcore knot of people freezing to death out there having a cigarette, and yet, oddly enough, these are the people who also wanted to talk the most, and having conversations with them, and hearing over and over and over again this seemingly ceaseless question. Why doesn't America, you know, why won't America listen? Why is our message is good, our message is right. Saving 45,000 people who will die next year without coverage in the next year is the right thing to do. Why is this so hard? And I wasn't trying to be an ass or anything, Garrett, but I'd look at them and I'd explain to them, you know, just like we've all talked about a million times here, if we've talked about it once.
Yeah,
there are 1,000 hours of right-wing hate for every hour of liberal programming. And, you know, people would say, well, you know, I mean, you know, Amy Goodman's out there, and I love Democracy Now!, and I'd say, I love Democracy Now! Too. But when's the last time you heard somebody take a call on Democracy Now!? It's not that kind of programming. And the right-wing always likes to say, well, you know, there's NPR. Yeah, there's an NPR call-in show, but it's not all over the country. I've only heard it a few times myself when I happened to be driving south through Nashville. They've got a nice little public radio set up down there. They got an AM station and they got an FM station. And I've heard that call-in show a couple of times, and it's very nice. But it's also not enough. It's like looking at the MSNBC lineup with Ed and then Olbermann and then Rachel. That's great for what it is. It's not enough. You know, I heard the same rerun of Rush Limbaugh on three separate stations, Garrett.
Oh, I don't believe it. I don't disbelieve it. It's total. Everybody knows. And the thing is that the problem is that, you know, terrestrial radio, it's not going to survive this century. It's just the model is dying, especially in the money-making part, which is supposed to be the music. We know that's a rotting, stinking carcass. The RIAA has made that an absolute fact of life. You know, but the thing is that, you know, until technology gets it into the car, it's not going to. The problem is, I don't think it's going to change. The technology has to get into each and every person's car before it'll make a difference, I think, if you're going to take it on in a traditional business model.
But the other thing that gets said inside that Goldberg article is that, what was it? Liberals expected this to happen overnight, and right-wingers have been working on it for a generation.
And this is very...
But the problem is, Garrett, we've barely even started. You know, here we sit, you know, 5 years old, my own show coming up on 6 years old, and, you know, we're still doing it, and to be doing it after 6 years, when they did everything in their power, the right-wing power elite base, whatever, in West Virginia, drove me off terrestrial radio, but I'm still here. And I'm as here as ever for anybody in West Virginia or anywhere else that wants to hear it, but you do have to have an internet connection. You know, that's why, it's marvelous that Rick Smith has a terrestrial radio show, but you know what? And I'm not telling tales out of school. He has to pay. He's not working for that radio station. He's buying time. And at one point, Air America was buying time. And if you're buying time and you're Air America as opposed to Rick, that's not a business model that's going to thrive when you lay it side by side against Rush Limbaugh and the barter model that says, I'll give you my program in exchange for you running my ads.
Well, yeah, the barter program is pure money. That's why syndicated cartoons were on TV like everywhere in the 80s, because they all were on the barter program. That's how they spread.
It's a way to fill your broadcast day. On the other hand, you know, there's stuff out there that bears remembering. Lottie pointed this out to me in the chat room. It's a Media Matters post going back to October 31st, 2006. An internal ABC Radio Network's memo obtained by Media Matters for America, originally from a listener to the Peter B. Collins Show, indicates that nearly 100 ABC advertisers insists that their commercials be blacked out on Air America radio affiliates. According to the memo, the advertisers insist that none of their commercials air during Air America programming. Among the advertisers listed are Bank of America. I think we bailed them out, didn't we? ExxonMobil, Federal Express, General Electric, McDonald's, Microsoft, Walmart, and the U.S. Navy.
Yeah, I remember distinctly when Peter Behan broke that story, and it did spread to some of the plethora of ex-Air America employees that are still, you know, on the doing the radio thing on the internet or wherever, you know, because they all were like, it was almost like that's a big surprise. Really. And the thing, you know, and it's the chicken and the egg. I mean, because, you know, one of the things that just annoyed me is everyone was always complained about Air America's, the ads they'd have, the gold and the, you know, the cheesy.
And why do you think I keep saying they were trying to run it on a right-wing model?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're dumb enough to buy into one of those buy gold now ads, or one of those, you know, Bob's a happy man with a rise in his confidence. If you're stupid enough to buy that stuff, you know, you're probably a right-wing radio listener.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's the same.
And there was no research, as far as I can tell, there was no real research done on reaching out and finding real liberal product to advertise at all. You know, in the chat room, Lottie is saying it's a wasted effort on terrestrial radio. The corporate advertisers will put any liberal show out of business.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, you know, in theory, it can be done. I mean, let's face it, Green 960 and KPOJ and all these other stations, granted they were in pretty liberal places, but they would have flipped ages ago, like the station in San Diego did, which was fairly successful too, if they weren't able to make a profit. Or at least convince their, you know, higher ups and Clear Channel hierarchy of all places that they were making money and doing something that was of value to Clear Channel. I mean, because that's it's possible. I mean, because most of the biggest liberal talk stations are owned by Clear Channel. Portland, San Francisco, L.A., Madison, Wisconsin, they're all clear channel stations.
That's true. Yeah, I do believe I do believe you're correct. I do believe.
I mean, it can be. It can. I mean, a foothold can be made in the model. You have to work really freaking hard.
And you've got to have an educated sales staff who knows how to sell the format.
And I mean, for a lot of the time, even in Phoenix, I mean, which is, you know, independent, they had, for a great deal of that time, they had, you know, a staff that seemed to know their business. That's how that was able to, you know, survive.
But if you're going to sell it, on a national network basis, Garrett, that's a different animal because nationally, a lot of these companies use ad buying agencies. There's, you know, you don't just phone up GM and say you want to advertise a Chevrolet. You phone up whoever their buyer is. And that's a very specialized level of sale. Garrett, I got to roll on because we got some stacked, but great. You know, I think this deserves the kind of attention we're giving it because if it's, you know, people want, liberals want liberal radio on the radio, not just on the computer. And if they want it there, then we've got to figure, somebody along the way has got to figure out the business model whereby it works.
I mean, that or somehow the because we can't wait until the technology gets the internet in the car, which is where it's going, because regular radio is going to die.
By the way, I heard Glenn Beck ask today, why are liberals trying to kill the internet?
We're not trying to kill the internet. We're
see?
The ones that built it.
But you know what? Emery and Eileen were sitting out there at 11 o'clock this morning going, how about that? Them liberals is trying to kill the internet. Sons of bitches, and we don't even have a computer.
Yeah, but that's the thing. They don't. I mean, that's the problem for the people that don't have the internet. I mean, my mother thinks that Rush Limbaugh's a dipshit, and she's probably listened to. She never listens to AM radio. I mean, in fact,
she just knows it innately.
She knows, yeah, because we were. Discussed, well, let's see, it was like 2 or 3 weeks ago, had company over, and it's like that discussion of whatever the newest thing Limbaugh had said that was, you know, just total asshattery. She's like, oh, well, he's a jerk. I mean, you know, I think she said something a little more fun than that, but the fact is, like, she knew it. I know she doesn't.
I had no idea Garrett's mom talked like that. But when you're talking about Limbaugh,
the point is that it's there. People know, people who don't even watch it get the idea that he's just, people like him are just jerks. They know it. The thing is that they don't have any, you're right, they don't have anything to listen to. I mean, because my parents, they just got a new car, and my mother, she just listens to music channels on XM. That's like a godsend for her because, I mean, you know, that's what she wants. But, you know, the fact is, don't get any of the idiot politics out of it. I mean, if you just listen to the music channels. I mean,
true.
That's what,
yeah.
You know.
Well, say hi to Garrett's mom for us, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like a sensible lady. Garrett, take care, my friend. We will talk soon.
Will do.
All right. Bye now. Mm-hmm.
Bye.
That's Garrett calling from Las Vegas. Onward we roll. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra, what's up?
Hey, listen, I was listening to the conversation. Who was the person right before me?
Garrett from Las Vegas.
The thing is that, you know, the whole idea of radio dying, yeah, that's all true, but the problem is the Internet isn't that democratic, if you know what I mean, because the radio is available to everyone, just like broadcast TV, and sometimes I think that the progressives and we liberals and we people who are indulging in this, you know, we get ahead of ourselves, and it's a problem with this sort of podcast business, not live business, not accessible business, because your average person, you know, your average person ain't going to be doing all this. You know what I mean?
And until, well, yes, Andrew, and until the day comes when you can turn it on live in your car like our buddy Alan the Trucker used to tell us about doing, we ain't reaching.
And the fact of the matter is, everybody, and I'm as guilty as the next guy. You know, I value what's, you know, what we're doing, leveraging the power of the internet, but the fact of the matter is, there's a whole bunch of people don't have a computer and don't have a connection.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, I'm not, you know, don't get me wrong, this is great, and, you know, I've, like, you know, learned a lot about it on my own and had access to it and been involved with the internet since the mid-90s, you know, in one form or another. So, it's just, you know, but, people need to understand that it's closed, you know, on some levels because any sort of, you know, otherwise we're just in this sort of, I don't know if it's an echo chamber or what, but it's really easy to forget the small numbers that this medium, at least in the United States, now I'm not talking about globally, that's a whole different story, but the people we want to reach to ultimately, you know, they're having a hard time getting to us. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And Lottie in the chat room just brought up the issue of the Telecommunications Act of 1996.
Well, right. That's what I'm saying. So
we gave, for all we're talking about terrestrial radio, we gave absolute dominance and control of terrestrial radio to the right wing in 1996.
And not only that, when you think of the Powell memo, I mean, you know, this business about Air America failing, there's a bunch of BS. Fox lost millions of dollars year after year after year for a half a decade. Hello. That man poured money into it hand over fist, didn't care if it was going to lose money.
And hasn't asked it to run on a shoestring either.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So I don't want to hear this about, oh, liberal radio's failing, you know, because it doesn't have the Powell memo behind it. You know what I'm saying? These people have been doing this for decades.
And liberals are so far behind the curve on this, they think they're on straight road.
Yeah, no, and so it's just sort of, I don't know, it's just sort of disingenuous to sort of talk about it as if it's even on the same playing field. There's so many forces at play to get the right wing where it is, namely the bottomless pit of money from the various weirdos who don't give a F. They just want it done. I don't see nothing like that, you know, on the progressive side. I see nothing. I just see a bunch of single-issue people, you know, crowding around the internet thinking they're getting shit done, and they're just talking to themselves. Sorry, you know. I'm way past...
No, there's a whole bunch of that, and a whole bunch of that is true.
I'm way past the internet as the savior. Now, I appreciate your show for what you said earlier. It's live. People don't understand. You know, my ass can call in. You know, we can have a conversation immediately. I ain't podcasting, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I do that for Peter B., but it's specialized. I know what I'm getting. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
I know what I'm looking for. I know what I'm hearing. I'm part of the choir. Jesus.
And frankly, you know, people do listen when they choose to listen, and that's fine. And I get email, you know, and they participate by emails. And so, you know, the podcasting certainly has its place. But in terms of, look at the right wing's version of podcasting. Again, it was Saturday, Sandra, when I was trapped in traffic. All right? It was Saturday. Rush doesn't broadcast live on Saturday. They essentially podcasted Rush's rerun to thousands of people stuck in cars.
Yeah, no, you know, his show is on Saturday morning, 3 hours, you know, every Saturday, on top of the hours upon hours during the week. I mean, so it's just what priorities are. I mean, the so-called left decided to, I don't know, work on civil liberties or whatever issues they work on and poo-poo the mass media.
Well, you know, Robert Perry covered that a while back. In that one, and we spent considerable time on the essay on air here, and that is that the so-called liberal organizations got out of media altogether. And I'm really looking forward to something coming up this month. As a matter of fact, our friends at Seneca 2 down in the Kanawha Valley are going to be having Robert Perry in to do a lecture, and we will be broadcasting that live.
Oh, yeah, that's good. Yeah, he, you know, he has an interesting perspective because he takes the long view because he's been at it for a while. And so, you know, he brings...
Yeah, he busted Iran-Contra wide open.
Yeah, he brings a welcome perspective. I mean, you know, if I go to Daily Kos, any of them places, one more time, you know, I'm sorry. I do appreciate it, but I'm also sort of like, you know what? The shit is just passing them by on some levels, you know? I don't know.
And you know, there's I've read a lot of the comments, and some of it's, well, we don't need media, we don't need the same thing the right wing has. You know, we're smart liberals. We don't need some angry guy reinforcing our points of view. You know, like pass the macrobiotic alfalfa, okay?
Yeah, well, what are they gonna do when there's Petraeus Brown up in that White House? How are they gonna fill it in? Sorry. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
There's some serious shit going on. I don't even have time. I'm looking at, if Obama fails, what's next? And what I see is a general, you know, just full on, straight up, let's, you know, we can easily go there. You know what I mean?
It is not that, it's not that far a trip, Sandra. It's really not.
You know, I just think that the navel gazing has to sort of come to a close.
And, you know what I mean, like, get something done?
Well, yeah, you know, I'm just sort of like, you know, Alinsky organized. I mean, you know.
Oh, God, I'm so glad you mentioned Saul Alinsky, because in one of his, and, you know, shame on me for talking about him, but in one of his hissies, the Glenn, you know, Goober Beck, was just having kittens with crocheted tails today because I guess there's an internship out there. You know, Obama's online organization was Obama for America, and now it's been changed over to Organizing for America, right? So there is an intern.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry to interrupt. Yeah, go ahead.
No, but I know. So now they've announced an internship at Organizing for America, you know, for students to intern with them and learn stuff. And they've got a proposed reading list, and one of them, and one of the books on the proposed reading list for incoming interns is Rules for Radicals by Saul Alinsky.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And Beck is on air today, and did you hear me? I just read that to you. They're not kidding. They want our children to read Rules for Radicals by Saul Alinsky. And if you don't think this is communism, I've got news for you. We're red baiting. It's 2010, Sandra, and they're out there red baiting.
Well, no, I mean, it's really quite frightening because, you know, I sort of caught whatever Obama was doing with the Republicans and, you know, how pleased they all were with the outcome. And, I mean, you know, it was sort of funny to look at how stupid the Republicans are. It's beyond and beyond. But what I found disturbing was just how damn Republican and conservative Obama really is. It's like, damn, you know, shit.
Well, hey, you want one that'll sit you up 3 o'clock in the morning with the little beads of sweat at your hairline? I just got this. It's a retweet being sent to me by Texas Betsy. According to some study out there, 53% of Republicans polled think Sarah Palin is more qualified to be president than Barack Obama. And you know what? They've got a media machine to spread that with.
Well, yeah, I mean, because it's just absurd on the face of it. I mean, whatever you want to say about Obama, that's just untrue. You know what I mean? It's just a joke.
She's a loony.
I mean, she is, yeah, that's unimaginable that could obtain a higher office than the one that she had in Alaska, which... it's still disturbing as is. I mean, the Alaskans are probably glad to see the back of her.
And, you know, the at the end of this whole shindig that I was at in D.C., the Capitol Steps came and performed Friday night.
Oh, they're still performing?
Yeah, oh, yeah. I guess they just rotate, you know, they get new talent or whatever. And they're still just cute as hell. But, yeah. Well, not cute, but, you know, fun.
No, yeah.
Innocuous.
One guy passed away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But one of the bits was a Sarah Palin bit, and she was singing along, and one of the lines was, "And 2 years into my presidency, I'll quit."
Well, the thing is that, I mean, yeah, it is, there is an amusing side to it all, but unfortunately, because of the way the Democrats are acting, you know, they're really setting it up, for a replacement to happen, and it's not going to be nice because, you know, the working class, once again, could possibly be convinced that Republicans have something to offer yet again, you know?
Oh, I know. And, you know, Maura is writing in from New Jersey, and she says, get Glenn Beck a Roman collar. Father Coughlin lives.
Yeah, oh, see, I was just thinking that when you were going on about it, actually, because that's what his role is. But in the underlying all of this is this huge corporate, you know what I mean? There's that whole element to it, which is what disturbs me. And now it's transnational. You know what I mean? I don't, you know, most people don't have time to think about, you know, the global implications, but it's pretty damn scary out there. You know, I don't know. I mean, I was.
And this guy's out there, you know, the third most listened to radio program in America. And he's telling people to stockpile their pitchforks and their torches because the revolution is coming.
Well, I actually think some sort of social breakdown could possibly occur, but unfortunately, you know, it's not the type that, you know, we want to see.
No, it's not, because those people have guns. They don't have pitchforks and torches. They have semi-automatic machine guns.
Or rocket launchers.
Grenade, the works. And you know what? We're trouble. We're the problem. You know, America will just be better if we can get rid of them liberals. That only, you know, Beck's after progressives.
Yeah, no. It's really, and you know, and it's like, I really don't know. I just sort of, you know, part of me is just thinking, well, you know, Obama needs to try to hold on, you know, because I really don't relish what's next. But the Hooverness about that guy is stunning. I'm just sort of, I don't understand what's going on with him.
And you know, see, Sandra, it is not good to let me out of the studio very often because I do turn on the radio and it's show material for 3 or 4 weeks. This afternoon, I hear Limbaugh make the following statement, and this is just murder. He's criticizing Obama about something, of course, and he says, we've got to have less showboating. And Limbaugh screams, "Showboating? When is a Republican ever given media access from which to showboat? You can hardly find a Republican on the mainstream media, the liberal media." I'm thinking, this guy must be spending every Sunday whacked out of his flippin' mind on OxyContin, because that's all there are on all the babblehead shows in the on Sunday mornings.
Well, no, it's just incredible because, I mean, I'm still going back to that retreat. I mean, those people sounded like idiots. I couldn't believe it. I mean, just ignore Obama and just the questions and their whole demeanor. That is scary, what's out there on the Republican side. They're crazy.
You know what? It was rather earth-shattering stuff here in West Virginia. I think you're familiar with the Supreme Court decision a while back that dealt with our Supreme Court race of a few years ago, in which Don Blankenship tried to buy him. Well, he bought himself one justice, and then he was trying to keep another one on the court. And in buying it, well, anyway, the guy, his bosom buddy was a guy named Spike Maynard, who was sitting on the court, who then got thrown off the court for being bosom buddies, and there were photographs of him hanging out with Don Blankenship on the French Riviera. So he lost his reelection bid. Just this past Saturday, he announced that he's running in the Republican primary, and he's going to run against my congressman, Nick Joe Rahal, because Nick Joe Rahal isn't pro-coal enough. Now, Nick Joe Rahal, whom I know personally, has never met a coal initiative, a coal company, a coal bill, a coal program that he did not back 159.376%. But he's not pro-coal enough. So, with lots of corporate money from Don Blankenship, Spike Maynard will run a campaign that may possibly unseat my Democratic congressman in November.
Wow.
And that's exactly what you're talking about, I think. You know, they're hell bent on a paradigm shift, and these poor mouth breathing knuckle walkers have no idea what it is that they're begging for. You know, do they really think that the free market would have been there taking care of them? If all